Wood Denver. Enid Goldstein is straight ahead. It's 12 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Partly cloudy, 55 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Pep Boys. Classes at Arvada High School were delayed for a while this morning because someone crashed a car through the front entrance of the building and wound up in the lobby. It took a couple of hours to remove the car from the building, but there was no structural damage. Some doors, though, will need to be replaced. The judge in the Kobe Bryant sexual assault case plans to hold a hearing behind closed doors early next week regarding statements that Bryant made to police. He made those statements last summer, a day after the incident. Attorneys will make their arguments whether those remarks should be allowed at trial. Bryant's defense lawyers want the statements thrown out and have argued that the publicity surrounding the statements could jeopardize his right to a fair trial. The defense claims that Bryant wasn't advised of his Miranda rights when police approached him 26 hours after the encounter with his accuser. His lawyers say officers didn't tell him they had a search warrant for his hotel room and didn't tell him they were taping parts of the conversation. A former Air Force Academy cadet is back in Colorado Springs following his release from a military prison in Miramar, California. 25-year-old Don Costa Sewell has been convicted of a sex crime and served a 14-month sentence in California jail. He pleaded guilty in connection with a December 2001 assault of a woman in a wheelchair in Los Angeles. While at the academy, Sewell was accused of rape by a female cadet but wasn't tried because of lack of evidence. In October 2002, Sewell was sentenced to 2 years confinement, discharged from the Air Force, dismissed from the academy, and ordered to forfeit all pay and allowances. Sewell registered as a sex offender upon his return to Colorado Springs on January 5th. A measure in the state legislature is apparently aiming at weakening the Public Utilities Commission. The commission oversees such entities as Xcel Energy. If the bill passes, it would take some employees of the PUC, move them to the Colorado Office of Consumer Counsel. Supporters of the bill say it's designed to get rid of any duplication between the PUC and the OCC by making the Office of Consumer Counsel the only state agency to represent consumers of utilities. An amendment to the bill makes an investigative arm of the PUC shrink from 15 people to 4 people and then move it under the OCC. Critics say this would weaken any investigations done by the unit. The amended bill passed a House committee last week. A loud blast rang out across central Baghdad today. The army has not commented on the cause of the blast. The U.S.-led administration's headquarters in central Iraq have been targeted by mortars or rockets several times in the past few months. Being declared frontrunner seems to be helping John Kerry's run for the White House. 7 states will hold primaries or caucuses next week, and in 2 of them, Arizona and Missouri, the Massachusetts senator has opened double-digit leads over his closest challenger, North Carolina Senator John Edwards, for the Democratic presidential nomination. Another state holding a primary Tuesday, South Carolina. On the campaign trail there this morning, the Reverend Al Sharpton told African-American high school students they could be whatever they want to be. President Bush is not backing off claims about the threat that Saddam Hussein posed before the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq.
Well, that first day with Dallas, you know, I was looking for...
That Saddam Hussein was a danger. He was a growing danger. We dealt with the danger, and as a result, the world is a better place and a more peaceful place.
Arizona Republican Senator John McCain and others have called for an independent probe of pre-war intelligence. This week, the former chief U.S. weapons inspector inside Iraq told Congress that pre-war intelligence and assumptions about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq were wrong. David Kaye spent months leading a team searching for WMD in Iraq. The Bush administration cited WMD as the principal rationale for the war against Iraq. The work of Kaye's team, the Iraq Survey Group, is continuing. If the Carolina Panthers win the Super Bowl, one fan says he'll continue his tradition of stripping naked and jumping into his pond. John Blade, a former Dallas fan, says the stunt began with the Panthers' playoff game against the Cowboys. Faced with a house full of Carolina fans, he pledged to take the chilly plunge if the Panthers pulled out a win.
Well, that first game with Dallas, you know, I was looking for somebody that was pulling for Dallas, but everybody that was at my house was Panther fans. So I just said, well, if they win, you know, I'll jump in the pond at my birthday suit.
With a chance of freezing rain forecast for Sunday evening, a Panthers win would make for a very icy swim. Stocks are lower at this hour. The Dow is down more than 26 points. The NASDAQ off by about 2. The S&P 500 down just over 3 points. In sports, the Colorado Avalanche continue their California road trip tonight as they head to Anaheim to play the Mighty Ducks. Avs beat the Ducks earlier this month. Last night, the Avs and LA Kings skated to a 3-all tie. Hurry into Pep Boys, where an Express Pro Line oil change is just $11.88. That's right, 1188, and it's done in 30 minutes or less, or it's free. See store for details. Pep Boys, they're car people. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 12:05.
We'll be back with more music, but first, a look at weather. Here's meteorologist Tom Sparks.
Thanks, Chad. There's a front moving in from the south, which is going to mix with warm air, giving us the distinct possibility for showers over the next few days. In fact, some of them are going to be big soakers, let me tell you. However, if you're planning any outdoor activities for the weekend, I have good news.
So it's going to be clear?
No. I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO. 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
Hon?
Yeah?
Can you keep the kids busy? I'm doing our taxes.
Oh, that's right. We're using TurboTax software this year.
Yeah, and it's so easy. TurboTax asks simple questions like an accountant would, and it automatically fills in all the right forms.
Really?
Mm-hmm. TurboTax also checks for errors, and calculations are guaranteed accurate.
Wow. What about deductions?
Oh, it found ones I didn't even think of.
Like those little tax deductions jumping on the sofa?
Hmm?
The kids.
No, I remembered them.
TurboTax. Taxes made easy. Taxes done right. Available at a retailer near you. See box for guaranteed details.
KNRC News Time is 12:06. Time to check with Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by Waterway Gas and Wash. Only one real problem still working, and under an injury accident, Monaco at 17th. Hopefully that'll be out of here in the next couple minutes. We do have some slow traffic on I-25 in either direction between Yale and Broadway, T-Rex related, and we have some striping going on. Going to be on Highway 93 between Colorado 128 and US 6. Waterway, the best car wash in town, has a winter protection package for you that helps protect your car from the worst of winter snow, salt, slush, and grime. Visit them today. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Stephanie DeLuca with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. A warm day today, at least above average. 44 degrees is our average. We're getting up to 55. Lots of sun, just a few clouds. Tonight, though, those clouds roll in down to 25. And for tomorrow, they stick around. Cooler as well, with some scattered snow showers accumulating up to an inch. Our high, 36. Sunday, mostly cloudy, chance of snow in 28. For the Weather Channel, I'm Stephanie DeLuca on AM 1150 KNRC.
Cloudy now, 55 degrees. KNRC News Time is 12:07. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 12:35, or when it breaks, on AM 1150 KNRC.
And now, the Enid Goldstein Show on AM 1150 KNRC.
12:07, 7 minutes after 12 o'clock. Welcome to the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live. I am yours until 3 o'clock, and I'm really looking forward to the guest that we're going to have later in the broadcast. His name is Kevin Phillips. He's written a blockbuster book called American Dynasty, Aristocracy, Fortune, and the Politics of Deceit in the House of Bush. What makes this book even more remarkable is that the man writing it, Kevin Phillips, is a Republican strategist, someone who is very much respected. And so to hear what he has to say will, to me, be very interesting, enlightening, I hope. So he is scheduled for the 2 o'clock hour. We have lots to talk about today. I hardly know where to begin because there's so much to discuss, but let's get started. Oh, well, I was going to sing to you. I started my singing lessons yesterday, except that I'm terrible. It turns out I don't know how to breathe. It turns out I don't know how to stand right. It turns out that I'm more or less a hopeless case. But I always wanted to learn how to sing, and so as I progress, if I ever do, I'll keep you informed, and maybe if I get good enough, I'll sing you a song. Okay, all right. Well, here we are. I just got this. I'm looking in the paper today, and I'm seeing all kinds of stuff. Remember we talked yesterday about drug testing of kids? Are you ready for this story? Here's a preschooler who's testing positive for cocaine. You know, I think there's something wrong here. The police want to know why this 4-year-old girl tested positive for cocaine. I want to know why they were testing a 4-year-old girl, number one. Maybe she was born with it in her system. Maybe the test results weren't right. The teacher got suspicious because she was playing with a balloon with some other kids and they were all tested. Why would the teacher even think that a 4-year-old might be drugged? I mean, you know, a 4-year-old could be taking too many vitamin pills. There are lots of things that could happen with a 4-year-old. But anyway, here's a 4-year-old. They want to know why she's on cocaine. A bill supported by payday lenders. Businesses that advance customers' high-interest money on their paychecks won first-round House approval yesterday. This is in Colorado. Paycheck lenders. Does anybody have a story about being a borrower of a paycheck lender? There are certain words that we do not use anymore. We never hear the word vulgar anymore. Why do we not hear the word vulgar? because you cannot break it out very often from the behavior that has just become ordinary in American life. What used to be called vulgar is just everyday life in America. Think of how much spam you have gotten trying to reveal to you the Paris Hilton's sex tapes. Think of how much spam you get offering you the possibility of increasing your penis size by about 3 or 4 feet. I mean, how can you even break out the concept of vulgar anymore? You simply cannot. And another word that you do not hear anymore is usury. What does usury mean? Well, I guess I could pull out my dictionary, but it means an inflated rate of interest. Do you know what a payday loan, what you pay in the way of interest on a payday loan? I think it is, all right, sometimes called deferred deposit loans, payday loans are short term. Annual percentage rates are 375% or higher. This is a payday loan you will never get out from under. And you know who payday loan companies target. They're going to target people who are poor, who are trying to stretch it from paycheck to paycheck. And once they make that loan, they borrow it, they are, according to the Rocky Mountain News, being charged an annual percentage rate that starts at 375%. Now, I think that's an unconscionable to let people borrow at that amount, because they are never going to be able to pay it back in general. 303-382-1150. Did you ever make a paycheck loan? I mean, maybe some of you will say, wait a minute, don't get off your high horse, Enid, because there are some poor people and that's the only way they can make it from paycheck to paycheck, and you will deny them that possibility. But I'm sorry. There used to be laws on the books, and now I don't know where they are. There used to be laws that if you were charged something like 20%, as I recall, that was considered usurious interest. And now it's very typical for credit cards, store credit cards. If you go to a place like Nordstrom or other places, I think it's even higher than that. I think you're in the 21-22% range. So this is argues for you're best off paying off your bill at the end of each month. But payday legislation, the House is backing some payday lender legislation, something that they want, so right away, to me, that's suspect. But the rate of interest, the usurious, unconscionable rate of interest starts at 375%. Governor Bill Owens, often the target of my wrath, has done something that I approve of, and I'm giving him a pat on the back. Well, that's part one. That's the good news. We'll get to the bad news later. He has taken it upon himself to write to blister, as the Rocky puts it, a CU. He is prepared to take a leading role over those rape allegations. Governor Bill Owens demanded CU leaders come clean with Coloradans about a recruiting scandal and to take significant steps if allegations are true. Colorado has a lot at stake, he said. He issued a scathing letter threatening to take action if the University of Colorado does not disclose facts about alleged abuses in the football recruiting program. Women, he wrote in his letter to CU, the CU Board of Regents and University President Dr. Betsy Hoffman, women are not recruiting tools. Oh, really? If the university fails to restore public confidence, please be assured that I will take whatever steps necessary to protect the integrity of the university. He would not elaborate on what steps he might take. He's not... by law, he can't do a lot of things, but he can do certain things, and he certainly can put the press on CU and Regents and so on. But the whole thing, the whole corruption behind a lot of these athletic programs, where they siphon off a lot of money because they make a lot of money for the university, where they're allowed to run roughshod over what would be the values of the academy, the values of the university, in order to bring in the revenues. You know, we're talking about the corrupting influence of huge revenues coming in. And guess what? The Rubicon has been crossed. Forget it. There's no going back. However much the academy, the university wants to call itself a noble institution, when they whore out themselves because they make money on the athletics and they allow they create a climate where these activities occur, these alleged rapes, these who knows what that's going on here in the recruitment of first-class athletes. I'm glad that Owens has stepped up to the plate and let him have it. I'm surprised it took him this long. The other part of the equation is I'm hearing a lot of rumors about Owens in the marital environment here, his separation. And I'm wondering if any reporters have had the courage to ask him in a press conference, because you hear so many rumors. You hear rumors that he's going to go off with Mark Holtzman in the sunset. You hear rumors that there are children that we don't know about that have occurred as a result of a little wiggle, wiggle, wiggle. We're hearing a lot of rumors, but, you know, there seems to be no evidence. But I wonder if any reporter has the courage to say to Governor Owens in a press conference, have you ever fathered any out of wedlock children? What would happen if a reporter did that? Would he put his or her newspaper in jeopardy? Would he be shut out of any kind of press conferences with the governor? What if it was a kind of a Gary Hart moment where Gary Hart denied, and of course, when they caught him, that was the end of it for him. So very often it's not the crime. Very often it is the cover-up. And I hearken back to Willie Brown, who was the mayor of San Francisco. Willie and his wife, he was at one time considered one of the most, if not the most, powerful person in California when he was Speaker of the Assembly. They used to call him the Ayatollah. He had very good relationships with both sides of the aisle, but he was an extremely powerful person. And when he was termed out, he became the mayor of San Francisco. Willie and his wife Blanche have not lived together. They never got a divorce, but they have been separated for decades. And Willie has had a succession of many, many girlfriends. Willie is an African-American. His girlfriends are usually white and beautiful and probably a third of his age, if not a half. And he has fathered children with at least one of them and maybe more. And, it's the same. Nobody cares in San Francisco. First of all, nobody cares in San Francisco. But the first thing was he never ran as a family values guy. That was number one. Number two, he never kept it a secret that he's out in public with these women. He changes girlfriends probably about as often as he changes his socks. Practicing safe socks, maybe. And he has fathered at least one child out of wedlock. He has grown children who have very responsible positions, and now he has a very young child, at least one that I know of. He never bothered to hide it. It seems to be an arrangement that he and his family have worked out, so it's none of our business. But that's a different situation than Colorado, where you have a governor who has run on a platform of family values and who announces after almost 30 years of marriage, a trial separation, but there is no concomitant announcement that nobody else was involved. And whenever a couple breaks up, the first question anybody asks, is anybody else involved? Is there something else going on? So that was never addressed. I have heard that when the heads up was given to the two publishers of our two major papers, the Rocky and the Post, that the governor's people said nobody else was involved. I was told that. I don't know if actually the phone call ever happened, but that was what I was told from good sources. So why we weren't told that, I don't know. So it certainly opens up the door to an amazing amount of speculation, and the rumors are thick and fast. The evidence is a little bit weak, perhaps non-existent even. So maybe, maybe the governor has been a good boy, and maybe Mrs. Owens has been a good girl, and there's nothing here, but boy, the air is thick with rumor and allegation. So I think it'd be good for somebody to ask some of these questions and see what the response would be. And nobody, this is what is intriguing to me, coming from San Francisco and having worked in Chicago, Los Angeles, New York, and all over the place, and lived in a lot of places. Nobody's asking him a question. Nobody is theorizing, speculating. Nobody wants to do it. I just think it says something for how clubby it is in Denver. People are protecting everybody, and some people were screaming at me for even bringing it up. Well, that is not journalism. No, we aren't doing journalism on Enid Live. Well, sometimes we are, but we are doing talk radio. Talk radio absolutely deals in facts, but it also deals in opinion and speculation and gossip and all kinds of wonderful things as well. So we're not held to the same standard as journalism when we are doing talk radio. So lots and lots of rumors, and I just wish one of our reporters, much as I love them, would ask some really pointed questions about the governor's private life. This is a guy, I think it's fair game, because it's a guy who has run on family values. But I am also giving the governor a Goldstein Gold Star today, because I think it's really good that he wrote this letter, putting it to CU, and a scathing letter saying, look, if you don't act on it, I will. I think that was a good political move for him, and I think it was a good substantive move. 303-382-1150, have you ever done a payday lender loan? These ones that start where the interest rate starts at 375% a year? Will anybody, do you ever get out? This is like, you're better off going to the mob for juice This is, and then one of these payday loans, that's exactly what it is. 303-382-1150. I think you maybe get a better rate from the mob. Georgia, the state of Georgia, Georgia, is considering banning the word. They have stricken, has proposed, the state school superintendent has proposed striking this word from Georgia's science curriculum and replacing it. The word that they are going to strike from Georgia's science curriculum, and remind me to spend as little time as possible in Georgia, is the word evolution. And they are going to replace the word evolution with the phrase, four words, to do what one word used to do, quote, biological changes over time. They want to strike the word evolution. This is from the state school's state's school superintendent. The changes include more than 800 draft revisions to Georgia's curriculum that have been posted by the Department of Education on its website. A proposed set of guidelines for middle and high school science classes in Georgia has caused a furor after state education officials removed the word evolution and scaled back ideas about the age of Earth and the natural selection of species. They don't apparently want to offend the creationists, never mind how ill-informed and misguided the creationists may be. The creationists believe that they take the Bible literally, and they believe that the earth is as old as the Bible says it is. So how we can let science be diluted in order to pander to a group of people who want to believe sort of that the kind of, you know, you can believe this metaphorically, you can believe it in your faith, but science tells us a different story. So essentially pandering to people who believe that the earth is flat and was created 5 or 10 minutes ago, why would Georgia want to do this? 303-382-1150. Do you remember a congressman from Nebraska named Roman Huruska? This reminds me of something Roman Huruska might have championed. He thought that since there were so many scholarships for the gifted, that there should also be scholarships for, and God help me, this is the true story, the mediocre. 303-382-1150. So Georgia, one time the government, the United States government, got rid of slums overnight, eliminated them overnight by renaming them something else. We don't have rain anymore. We have precipitation. And we apparently don't have evolution anymore. What we now have is biological changes over time. I think this is really a sad story, and I don't think it speaks well for the Georgia educational establishment that they allow something like this to occur. 303-382-1150. Matt in Denver. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hello, Enid. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Welcome back. Good to hear you again.
Thank you. I'm chagrined, however, about what Georgia's doing.
Oh, yes, and that's what I wanted to comment on. It seems to me that the South, much to their excitement, I'm sure, I think philosophically at least, won the Civil War. They are dictating who is elected president. They certainly bring all the Democrats to the right side of the aisle in terms of race policy. And now here with how they are controlling the schools, especially in Texas, where the textbook wars are certainly at their highest. But this law, they are, like you said, pandering to the extreme elements of the right wing, the religious fundamentalists, the Southern Baptists, and they're controlling the debate entirely in this country.
Well, to see how easily the whole idea of standards breaks down, where the educational establishment in the state of Georgia, this is a sophisticated place. I mean, you've got CNN headquartered in Georgia. You have a big liberal population in Georgia. You have a lot of things going on in Georgia. You have a very busy airport in Georgia. You have lots of things going on in Georgia. So for a state as sophisticated, you have Ted Turner in Georgia, and you did have Jane Fonda there, too. So for a state as sophisticated as Georgia to bend, to yield to the creationists on this point is astonishing to me. And, you know, what happens to your high school diploma when you graduate from school in Georgia? If you want to go to major in sciences in university or to get an advanced degree or go on to med school, of what value will your training be when you graduate from school in Georgia where creationism is becoming part of the curriculum and maybe even supplanting evolution?
Exactly. And I think what's been so, not from my perspective because I disagree with it, but brilliant from the right wing's perspective is that they have understood that power is largely at the local level. They've had these grassroots campaigns where they have started to control the school boards, the city councils, and they've realized that once you get those in your control, then the rest of the it falls into line, the senators and the congressmen and even the president, because...
Well, I'm surprised, though. These are people not running for office, I don't imagine, in the same way that a politician is. So for them to yield and bend to a lot of political pressure is, to me, a sad story. Matt, I thank you for the call, 303-328-2150. Also, if you think we're having troubles at the University of Colorado... Here you have a day after, this is St. Paul, Minnesota, day after revolutions about recruits' trips to strip clubs and underage drinking during official campus visits since early December. University of Minnesota athletic director said he began an investigation and will formulate a plan when he meets with the Gophers football coach. You know, like he didn't know this was going on. Apparently, this is going on in every single school that's recruiting first-class athletes. This is what they do in the competition. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC.
Get your side, get their side. Hear both sides talk on AM 1150 KNRC.
Are you tired of high monthly house payments? Are you ready to take advantage of interest rates as low as 3.25%? Then call Western State Mortgage at 303-754-4911 and get a loan package that is custom tailored to your needs and lower your payment by hundreds of dollars per month. Get the best rate available at the best price possible. Start your 2004 with a financing solution from Western State Mortgage. Whether it's debt consolidation or home refinancing, Western State Mortgage supports independent radio right here in Denver and Colorado. Call and mention this ad and Western State Mortgage will donate $250 to the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. Western State Mortgage will guarantee your experience will be positive. So start your 2004 off right and call them now at 303-754-4911 or visit the website at www.westernstatemortgage.com to get your free rate quote and good faith estimate. That number is 303-754-4911. Western State Mortgage, your local refinance partner.
Do you sometimes wish that CNN Crossfire used real bullets? Did Geraldo lift the fog of war for you? Is the Saudi royal family as inbred as Buckingham Palace? PlainPolitics2004.com has the answer to these and 102 other pressing political questions. If you secretly prefer same-sex marriage because you know it won't create any more Democrats, or you don't really care who carries California in November just as long as they carry it further out into the Pacific Ocean, then PlainPolitics2004.com is required reading. Get involved in the political debate, because remember, you live in a free democracy where every 4 years our political leaders wish to be Black, gay, poor, Hispanic, Southern, Northern, liberal, conservative, but most of all, re-elected. Playing Politics 2004 card decks can be purchased at the select border bookstores or at www.playingpolitics2004.com.
AM 1150 KNRC features more in-depth reporting than any other Denver talk station. Our in-depth reports have been recognized by the Colorado Broadcasters Association and the Associated Press for 4 awards of excellence. Hear in-depth reports from award-winning KNRC reporters Mark Roberts and Stacey Farb during the Greg Dobbs Morning Show or anytime at knrcradio.com, where you can click it and own it. Denver's in-depth talk station, AM 1150 KNRC.
Lionel, would you join me every weeknight from 9 to midnight here on AM 1150 KNRC? Now back to Enid Goldstein.
1228 on the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live. Well, I was up in my office, and I'm rummaging around because I'm just thinking about this Georgia business where they're considering banning the word evolution, and they want to replace it with the phrase biological changes over time. And as some of you know, I began life, and I like to think I continue it, but that's really a joke on my part as a writer. And I wrote a piece that was published, which I thought I brought down with me. Where did I put it? Oh, where is it? I thought I had it. Well, I guess I'm going to have to go back up and find it again. Anyway, I did a piece on the language and being verbally challenged, and... let me see. No, I guess I didn't bring it down. I thought I had it in my hand, and I didn't. Maybe Joe can get it. I'll read it to you a little bit later. But it's all about how Americans are, you know, this kind of euphemism that we're doing. This is just an amazing kind of machinations with the language. We don't use the language anymore the way we should. So I'll share that with you in a second. Okay, let's get back. Here's something that I clipped that I liked a lot, and that is... Reinhold Niebuhr, the philosopher, or no, I'm sorry, not Niebuhr. It was Nietzsche, the philosopher, who made this, who had this quote. He said, without music, life would be an error. I just thought that was an interesting quote. I don't actually know if that's true, but I liked it a lot. Okay, here we are. The German cannibal who ate, he put an ad on the internet. He put an ad on the internet advertising for somebody who would like to be eaten alive, essentially. And some guy presented himself, and that's exactly what this German guy did. He's like a computer guy. This is what happens when you're in front of your computer monitor for too long. A German who confessed to killing, dismembering, and eating another man, who allegedly agreed to the arrangement over the internet, was convicted of manslaughter and sentenced to 8.5 years in prison. He only got 8.5 years in prison, which is amazing to me. I think that being in prison for this guy is like, this is a place full of a lot of potentially free and fast meals, as far as I can tell. So I don't think that was really a great idea. And I like this story a lot before we get on to the serious stuff today. And here it is. A teen who was called a weakling. He was a high school freshman, 14 years old. He walked out of a weightlifting session after being called a weakling, became a hero minutes later when he saved an elderly man who had driven into a pond. The kid's name is Justin. He's one of three people who jumped into the water to pull a man from his sinking Lincoln Town Car. He says it's amazing. There are snakes. There are alligators. All three of them just jumped right in after the guy and pulled him out. And the kid is 5'3". He weighs 130 pounds. He couldn't lift as much weight as the other boys who teased him. And so he left early and he began walking home and they called him a weakling. And I'm thinking, man, I should have stayed at football. The coach is going to be mad at me. Why did I leave? And then wham, he sees this elderly man driving a car and he saves his life. I like that story very much. Okay, here we are. Did you watch the debates last night? I watched the debates. I think I haven't really seen much of the debates, and I have to say, even though the reviews were lukewarm today, I thought they were good. And to me, they were really enlightening. And I'm going to tell you what I saw. First of all, I was surprised at Al Sharpton. I have been seeing him on Bill Maher's show. I have been seeing him all over the place. He is very funny, and he is very pithy. He really gets to the heart of something, and he has said some really good things. I didn't always hold Al Sharpton in the highest esteem, particularly after the Tawana Brawley thing, but I gotta say, he's really redeeming himself on the campaign trail. I was disappointed in Wesley Clark. Did anybody see the debate last night? Wesley Clark, first of all, is not nearly as cute on television as he seems to be in his pictures for some reason. So, and he seemed very scripted and programmed and a little bit robotic. And the guy who surprised me a lot was John Edwards. I can see why it's being reported that the Republicans are a little bit afraid of him. He really connects with people. They call him the Brett girl behind his back, but he's attractive. He seems smart. He's got a certain gravitas. He connects. There's something emotional and he has an ease about him. He's as a retail campaigner, I think he's got high marks there, probably the best in the whole field. I was dismayed at John Kerry. Dismayed. I was talking to a friend of mine who is a longtime reporter in Los Angeles yesterday, and he said, I'm going to tell you something. Here's what he says. He says, Bush is going to get reelected. I said, why do you think that? He said, Bush is going to get reelected because when they debate each other, Kerry and Bush, Kerry's going to seem smart and sophisticated, maybe a little bit aloof, all those other things, but the common man is going to identify with George W. Bush. That's it. And Kerry will not come off well in the comparison. So all there's talk about, did Kerry get Botox? Did he not get Botox? All that stuff. Forget it. He is like a tree. He is absolutely like a tree. I thought he was kind of attractive in a homely kind of a way for a long time. But on TV, he just seems odd looking. And although he had good answers, there is not personality, there's not sparkle. He's way too identified with, I think, the status quo. And the worst of the bunch, I thought, was Lieberman. God bless him. He sounded to me like an apologist for the Bush administration, for all the bad decisions that the Bush administration had made. And he seems, there's a namby-pamby quality about. But the one I found myself liking the most, that I have talked about Howard Dean, but when I look at his pictures in the paper, and when I've seen him here and there in snippets on TV, you know, there's something, you can look at a person's face and you can read a lot about that person, just looking at him. And I'm thinking, there's a little shallowness, there's maybe, he's great. He's saying all the right things. I can't believe he's sinking in the polls. People are so frightened. And it's being reported that the Democratic establishment is breathing a big sigh of relief. Because why? Because he's, you know, he's on the way down. He was like an internet flash in the pan. He was like the tech bubble, and that's it for him. But I liked him the best of the candidates. He's forthright. When he was the governor of Vermont, he said, these guys in the White House don't know anything about money. He said, they can't balance, you know. He was fiscally very sound for the state of Vermont. And he's kind of a tightwad and a penny pincher at home. He said he ran the state like he ran his own checkbook. And I kind of like that. I thought that was really good. And I like what he had to say about the war. And I like what he had to say about the intelligence. And I got to say, I looked at a press conference today, just a few minutes ago, George W. Bush was talking about this huge cost of what the Medicare reform is going to be, a third higher than he said. Now, let me tell you something. If you're the chief executive, if you're on Wall Street, and your earnings are lower than what would have been projected, let me tell you, you take a hit and your stock takes a hit. Here is the leader, the CEO of the country. And he didn't even know that this was going to come in a third higher? What kind of a CEO is he that he didn't know that? That he was such a bad CEO that he couldn't evaluate the intelligence that he was getting about Iraq? Take a little more time and evaluate it before you send people in to lose their lives. Well, he said, we're going to evaluate that now. Well, where were you before? Isn't it a little bit late to be evaluating the intelligence? If you're a top-notch CEO, shouldn't you have done that right out of the box before you send people's children in to babble? 303-382-1150. I hear from the Republicans this mantra about stepping up to the plate and taking responsibility. But George W. Bush, for him, the dog ate his homework. He says, well, Congress, you know, they're going to really have to work together to get that deficit down. Please, please, where is the apology? Where is the taking of responsibility? I'm Ina Goldstein. You're listening to AM 1150 KNRC. 12:37, time to check into the KNRC newsroom for an update from Tim McLaughlin. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Enid. Good afternoon. Partly cloudy, 55 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Waterway Gas and Wash. Governor Bill Owen says women are not recruiting tools and says he'll step in unless Colorado University does something to address charges that it uses sex parties to attract football players. Boulder District Attorney Mary Keenan made the claim last fall in a deposition for a woman who says she was raped at a party for players and recruits. Governor Owens is ordering the members of his cabinet to look at past audits for their departments and to then follow the suggestions in those audits. This on the heels of a review of the Colorado Lottery that revealed that some recommendations made in 1997 had been ignored. Some 30 homeless people will be meeting in Denver tomorrow after conducting a week of research on their plan for a permanent tent city that would house up to 200 men and women. The Human Services Department had asked them to find out about costs for water, power, portable toilets, and trash pickup. In sports, the Colorado Avalanche are in California again tonight, this time to play the Anaheim Mighty Ducks. The Avs skated to a tie with the Kings in L.A. last night. Waterway, the best car wash in town, has a winter protection package for you that helps protect your car from the worst of winter snow, salt, slush, and grime. Visit them today. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 12:38.
Hi, this is Doug Kellett. Brenda Golden Triangle Wines and Spirits is here again with me. And Brenda, we've got Valentine's Day coming up. And I actually have a couple ladies in mind here.
Oh, lucky you. You want to buy them some wine?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
But they've got distinct different personalities. Okay. For example, one is a lot of fun.
Ah, then a bottle of French champagne would be just the perfect gift. I have Delamont Champagne, which is just one of the most quality champagnes I have on my shelf, and it's on sale for $24.99 through Valentine's Day, regularly $28.49.
That sounds great. Now, I've got one that's real sophisticated. I think she's going to cook me a seafood dinner.
Ooh, there's nothing more romantic than a bottle of rosé. Plus, rosé goes wonderfully with seafood. I have a bottle on sale this week for $16.99. Serge Laloux Rosé is one of my favorite rosés, one of the best I've ever tasted.
I'll let you know how it turns out.
Okay.
I knew you'd have the right answer. Brenda at Golden Triangle Wines and Spirits, located 12th and Broadway.
Golden Triangle Wine and Spirits, where variety, pricing, and convenience intersect at the corner of 12th and Broadway. Call 303-893-8437.
KNRC News Time is 12:39. Time to go to Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by Hyatt Hotels and Resorts. getting a report of an accident in the area of Kalamath and Santa Fe. Watch for that. I also got an object on the roadway, northbound I-25 at 6th Avenue in the right lane, causing delays. Got some delays as well due to T-Rex both directions, I-25 between Yale and Broadway. Cabin fever, at least treat yourself to room service. Now save 20% off Hyatt's regular rates on a weekend room at participating Hyatts. Offer ends April 11th, so visit Hyatt.com today. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. A weak area of low pressure will bring increasing clouds as we move through the afternoon. This will be our last really mild day. We'll be up around 55 for the high. It'll be overcast tonight with a low of 24. Then it turns sharply colder over the weekend. Scattered flurries and snow showers on Saturday, a high of 36. Partly cloudy, upper 20s on Sunday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
Under partly cloudy skies, it's 55 degrees. KNRC news time is 1240. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 1 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, I'm Evelinda Ehrman.
And I'm Judy Schwartz. We co-host Style Matters Live.
Even if you're not born with great style, you can buy it.
Just like we do. And this extends to our homes. Element, Denver's newest furniture store for urban home furnishings, accessories, and artwork, meets all our style needs and will meet yours too.
Element has multifunctional furniture to maximize your space in a condo, apartment, loft, or smaller home. The clean lines of Element's furniture for today's urban lifestyle will work with what you already own.
You'll love their eclectic mix of styles, all presented in a way you can envision in your own home.
Prices are affordable, with lamps as low as $100 and sofas starting at about $1,000. Interior design services are available.
Element is open Monday through Friday, 11 to 6, Saturday, 10 to 7, and Sunday, 1 to 5. Element is located at 77 West 9th Avenue, a half a block west of Broadway in the Golden Triangle. 303-825-3770.
Element. Your lifestyle, your home, your element.
KNRC Market Watch.
Wall Street's indexes are sliding. The Dow is down 51 points now. The S&P 500 is losing 3. The NASDAQ is down 8 points. Decliners extending their lead over advancers on the big board. Now ahead by about 200 issues. The biggest loser at the New York Stock Exchange is Winn-Dixie, once the dominant grocer in the southeastern U.S. The stock has slid 29%, hitting a multi-decade low today after the company posted a quarterly loss. Winn-Dixie, along with the nation's other grocers, is facing tough competition from Walmart supercenters, which include full-fledged grocery stores. Supercenters are especially prevalent in the southeastern U.S. Walmart stock is right now down 38 cents. Gateway, one of the big board's biggest percentage gainers, right now it's up 10% after announcing it will buy personal computer maker eMachines for $235 million in cash and stock. Once again, the Dow down 49 points. NASDAQ losing 7. I'm Andrew O'Day in the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Our contact number, 303-382-1150.
We hear you.
303-382-1150. Close is your phone. 303-382-1150. KNRC.
Not only are we going to New Hampshire, Tom Harkin, we're going to South Carolina and Oklahoma and Arizona and North Dakota and New Mexico. We're going to California and Texas and New York. And we're going to South Dakota and Oregon and Washington and Michigan. And we're going to win in Massachusetts and North Carolina and Missouri and Arkansas and Connecticut and New York and Ohio. And then we're going to Washington, D.C. to take back the White House. Yeah!
12:43 on the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live. Why did everybody make a big stink about that? That was Howard Dean. It was like exhorting the troops. What was the big deal about that? Did conservative pundits have so little disgust of substance that they had a latch on that? I'm sorry. If you're the head of the country, as George W. Bush purports to be, then to walk away from the responsibility for these enormous deficits. Even Republicans are starting to scream about it. Conservative, even the junkie across the way at Walmart starting to come down hard on Bush for the spending. I mean, this is unconscionable where you tax nothing and you spend like there's no tomorrow. 303-382-1150. 303-382-1150. So, where's the apology? George Bush promised to bring honor and integrity back to the White House and said he got rid of accountability. Surely, even supporters of the Iraq War must be dismayed by the administration's reaction to David Kaye's recent statements. Iraq, he now admits, did not have WMD or even active programs to produce such weapons. So on and on and on. Where is the apology? 303-382-1150. We should be playing I'm Sorry, So Sorry. I'm Sorry, So Sorry. Because you're not going to hear from the administration, apparently. All right, here it is. This is a piece I wrote. This is in reference to Georgia, the state of Georgia, considering banning the word evolution. This is the state school superintendent has proposed striking the word evolution from Georgia's science curriculum and replacing it with the phrase biological changes over time. I wrote this piece and it was widely published a while ago, and here it is. As an occasionally vigilant member of the Language Patrol, I'm struck by its latest meanderings. Old people are about to disappear and be replaced by the chronologically gifted. Short people are also on the verge of extinction. In their place, the vertically challenged are about to rise. Blacks used to be Negroes until they became African Americans. Orientals are now Asians. Indians have become Native Americans, which is actually how I think of myself, since I too was born in this country, though most people don't normally think of Goldsteins as Native Americans. All this is in distinct contrast to, say, England, where the developmentally challenged are routinely referred to as the halt, the lame, the insane, where there is no euphemism for the place to which euphemism is consigned. But here, in the land of the free, except apparently when it comes to speech, the handicapped have all but disappeared. It wasn't a medical breakthrough that did it. They have merely been replaced by the differently abled. The definition of ableism is especially interesting. It is defined as oppression of the differently abled by the temporarily abled, which makes us all sound like we're ranting. Even our pets are not immune. To avoid insulting them, never mind that English isn't even their second language, we're supposed to refer to them as domestic companions, which sounds like to me like they should be taking a shopping. As it is, students no longer flunk. They are instead grade retentioned. We're not even fired anymore. We are dehired. In fact, we don't even die. Instead, we are the victims of negative patient care outcome. Anyone who has ever flown knows that barf bags have disappeared only to be replaced by motion sickness containers. Show me a society that eliminates barf bags from its vocabulary, and I'll show you a society that needs them. And as for men, forget about finding one. When we weren't looking, they turned themselves into the phallocentered. We can hardly communicate with one another as it is, never mind our advanced fiber optics, but the language of political correctness has become more oppressive than the oppression it seeks to remedy. Euphemism, by its very nature, is just another way of not telling the truth, and politically correct language, an intellectual police state cloaked in democratic drag, pretends that we're all equal when, in fact, we are profoundly unequal. We're equal only in the eyes of the law if those eyes aren't blinking. The upshot is, if you have the courage to tell it the way it is, or at least the way you see it, you may be called a racist, fascist, or sexist, for which, interestingly enough, there seem to be no politically correct euphemisms at all. So you may want to comment on the use of euphemism, because there's a lot of it, and our textbooks are filled with all the language that you can no longer use in a textbook. I have a bunch of examples, which I will dig up for you as we continue. 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein, and you are listening to AM 1150, KNRC.
Most people come from one school of thought. Welcome to the beauty of both sides. AM 1150, KNRC.
Wow, I can't believe it. 50 years. Hi, this is Keith Lair with my sister Linda asking you to come see Lair Fireplace and Patio for all your fireplace needs and help us celebrate our 50th year in business.
Lair's is truly a family business. With our brother Ken at our Arvada store at 81st and Sheridan, I'm at our Littleton store on South Broadway, just north of Arapahoe Road, and Keith is at our original store in Denver at Holly and Evans.
When our father, Joe Lair, started in 1954, he had a very simple philosophy. Sell quality products and treat your customers fairly. You know what? It's worked for 50 years.
That's why we carry quality fireplaces and inserts from Napoleon.
If you're building, remodeling, or converting an existing fireplace to gas, check out the superior construction and efficiency of Napoleon.
You know, the fireplace is the focal point of most rooms, so do it right. Don't skimp. Our expert installers can give you a free estimate right in your home.
That's Lair Fireplace and Patio, Denver's most trusted fireplace specialist for 50 years.
KNRC Community Commitment.
Have you been considering adoption? There are numerous children in Adams County who need adoptive families. Make a child's dream come true in the new year and foster or adopt a child from Adams County. You do not need to live in Adams County to participate. Call them now at 303-412-5151. That's 303-412-5151. Make your New Year's resolution to fulfill a child's dream and be an adoptive parent for Adams County.
John Elway is going to the playoffs. They'll help pay off your current vehicle and get you into a new 2004. Same low, no haggle prices, same price match, plus a money-back guarantee. John Elway, honest.
Tickets are on sale now for the 2004 KeyBank Denver Distinguished Lecture Series, featuring the dynamic lineup of retired General Tommy Franks on Tuesday, March 30th, and Steve Forbes on Monday, May 17th. Tickets are still available for these compelling speakers. For information on the remaining ticket packages, go to www.denverlectureseries.com and expand your world by attending the 2004 KeyBank Distinguished Lecture Series, a program of junior achievement and sponsored in part by AM 1150 KNRC. And now the Enid Goldstein Show continues on AM 1150 KNRC.
12:50 on the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock, and we're going to be joined by Kevin Phillips, Republican strategist, who's written a damning book about the Bush aristocracy. But we're talking about language, and I read a piece that I wrote, and, oh, it was published in the San Francisco papers and all over the place. And, you know, and here is Diane Ravitch, whom we have had on. These are actual lists of banned words that are, these are lengthy glossaries compiled but from bias guidelines issued by major educational publishers and state agencies. And let me give you an example. You can't say Adam and Eve anymore. You have to replace it with Eve and Adam to demonstrate that males do not take priority over females. You can't say blind. It's offensive. You have to say people who are blind. You can't say blind leading the blind. That's handicapism. You're not allowed to say bookworm. Banned is offensive. Replace it with intellectual. You can't use fairy because it suggests homosexuality. You have to replace it with elf. Can't say jungle. You have to say rainforest. You can't say old wives' tale. You have to call it, because it's considered sexist, you have to say folk wisdom. You can't say Chief Sitting Bull. Banned is a relic of colonialism. You have to replace it with Tatanka Ayotaki. You can't say that someone's confined to a wheelchair. It's considered offensive. You have to replace it with, quote, person who is mobility impaired. You can't call somebody courageous. It's banned as patronizing when referring to a person with disabilities. Craftsmanship is banned as sexist. The cult banned as ethnocentric when referring to a religious group. You're not allowed to say huts. You have to replace it with the term small houses. You can't say someone's insane. You have to replace that with person who has an emotional disorder or psychiatric illnesses. This is all inspired by the fact that the state of Georgia wants to replace the word evolution with the phrase biological changes over time. Randy, hi, you're live with Enid on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, Enid, welcome back.
Thank you.
Good to hear you again.
Thank you.
I had to talk to Doug when you were gone.
Oh, my goodness.
That was fun. Anyway, I like the rap about the language. I was thinking about the policy of the way they're bringing our dead soldiers back from Iraq and how...
Well, tell people what it is. It's no longer body bags.
Right. Well,
bags have ceased to exist. They come back in, quote, transfer tubes.
That's what made me think of it. I was thinking they're not bodies coming home. They're expired units.
Is that what they're saying, expired
units? No, I just think they're about a step away from that, though.
Yeah, no, you're right.
They're expired units in transfer tubes.
Transfer tubes, that's right.
It's real nice.
Yeah.
And I like your take on Edwards. Well, you were talking about Edwards.
Isn't he sort of, everybody's talking about him as a possible vice presidential candidate, although he would never say that right now because they're all like want to be on the A-team. But he's a little bit in the Dan Quayle-like department, even though I think he has more smarts and substance than Dan Quayle. Well, because he's cute and he's younger looking. He is 50. But he looks younger than 50.
But Clinton looked young. Kennedy looked young. And
do you know how old Kennedy was when he took office?
He was young.
You want to know? You want to guess?
Yeah, I can't remember.
42.
Wow.
42?
Yeah,
somebody said 42.
Edwards is 50.
Yeah, so...
And the thing, he actually reminds me of Clinton in he's like Clinton, but not kinky. You know, he's talented. He speaks really well. I've been in his camp since Iowa. I have friends back there who stood up for him in the caucuses, and they were originally Kucinich people, and they heard Edward speak a couple times because they all basically come to your living room in Iowa, and he won them over. I mean, by the time the caucuses came, they were standing up for him. And then I saw him, he was giving his speech at the end of the Iowa caucuses, and it was beautiful. He spoke so well. There was such great energy behind it and in the room. And that's when they cut in then with Dean's speech, which was just terrible.
That Dean did a really good job last night on the debate. And I have to tell you, I am very pleased that he's had the courage to get out there and not be namby-pamby, to say it exactly the way it is. He can do it because he's not been an insider. He's been an outsider. And I really admire him for it. He says all the things that I would say if I were running for president.
Yeah, I like Dean, too. I just don't think he'd be the best nominee.
Well, it's a flame-out. What it is, it's like a tech flame-out. That's it. He has flamed out, and unless there's some major resurrection that happens, and I guess we can't rule anything out, it's starting to look like he could be toast, and I'm really chagrined by that because he's the only one who's had the courage to say it the way it is, and the more he says it the way it is, the more uncomfortable the party becomes, the more voters say, well, you know, he's too angry and he can't win against Bush. But I think when you put Kerry against Bush, Kerry looks like a tree.
Yeah, he looks like a tree next to Edwards, too. That's why I think Edwards is a better choice. I think,
but I don't think Edwards has got the background.
I don't think it matters. Bush didn't have the
background. No, Bush didn't have the background, but what he had was his father as the background.
But that's not who, the thing that decides it, it's everybody on the right's going to vote for Bush. Everybody on the left is going to vote for our nominee, no matter what. It's the few, like, mush-headed fence-sitters who are going to decide who's president. And they base their decision on, like, at the last week on some commercial they saw or whoever looks better on TV. I think that's the thing is we don't have to win over the Democrats with our nominee. We have to win over the sort of flakes in the middle. And you're going to do it a lot easier with a good-looking, smart, well-spoken candidate than with a tree, like you say.
Well, but the tree's got the momentum, so we'll see. And everybody said, all the pundits who were completely wrong about Iowa, they've been completely wrong about every single thing that
yep.
they punditize on, and they're the ones who say Kerry's the one who's going to do it. I'm not so sure he's going to look that good next to Bush. But I thank you, Randy, for the call. 303-382-1150. I just got this email from Annie. Annie says, I almost had a heart attack when I read that Bush and Blair were up for a Nobel Prize nomination. Is that true? Because I have not seen that anywhere. Are they kidding? Unbelievable. Anyway, keep on Bush. I worked for an attorney who knows him well, as well as the rest of his family, and he says that Bush is dumb as a post, that the old man was a fairly good businessman, but son is stupid, that there's nothing at home upstairs. Well, I guess we're finding that out the hard way. And when we're talking about the state of Georgia, wanting to get rid of the phrase evolution and replace it with four other words, biological changes over time, I have to laugh because here's California. Let's put that up against California. With a budget deficit of about $14 billion, California could use a major infusion of positive energy. So it may be appropriate timing that in this most Asian of American regions, State Assemblyman Leland Yee, a Democrat from San Francisco, has introduced a resolution that urges the California Building Standards Commission to adopt standards that would aid Feng Shui, the ancient Chinese practice of promoting health, harmony, and prosperity through the environment. So they want to make that part of the building codes in California. Well, if you know anything about Feng Shui, which I know only a little bit, it's about the art of placement, I think. You have things in the most harmonious placement, and it promotes more positive energy, and it can promote more prosperity in your life. And you can't have doorways in certain places. You're not supposed to have mirrors in other places, but they're good in one place, but not good in another place. So anyway, California wanting to lard its building codes with feng shui. And then you have Georgia that wants to ban evolution and replace it with four words, biological changes over time. Where would you rather live? 303-382-1150. And one other thing before we get onto some serious politics. Gay couples, it's a growing trend. Many who are very religious go to their clergy people to have a ceremony. And many of the clergy people are accommodating them. They're not legal ceremonies. They're probably not legal in the eyes of the church or the synagogue, or definitely not legal in the eyes of the state, this state. But people are doing it, and clergy, rabbis, priests, ministers are accommodating them. You know what? I think that's a really good idea. I'm glad that they are. You may differ, though. You may disagree. And we'll talk about it as we continue. 303-382-1150 later in the broadcast. We're going to be joined by Republican strategist Kevin Phillips. He's written a book called The Politics of Deceit in the House of Bush. I can't wait to talk to him. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hear both sides talk. AM 1150 KNRC. Englewood, Denver. Enid Goldstein continues straight ahead. It's 1 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Partly cloudy, 55 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by General Motors. Governor Bill Owen says women are not recruiting tools, and he says he'll step in unless the University of Colorado does something to address charges that it uses sex parties to attract football players. Boulder District Attorney Mary Keenan made the claim last fall in a deposition for Lisa Simpson's lawyers. Simpson is a former CU student who claims rape at a party for players and recruits in 2001. The governor sent a letter to CU President Betsy Hoffman yesterday asking her to reassure young women that the university will not tolerate a climate of sexual misconduct. He didn't set a deadline, but said he won't allow much time before he steps in. CU Athletic Director Dick Tharp and football coach Gary Barnett both deny condoning sex or alcohol as recruiting tools. Barnett calls even the suggestion offensive. Last weekend wrapped up with a snowstorm, and we in Metro Denver should expect another one this weekend. Depending on your point of view, National Weather Service forecaster Rob Krohn has good or bad news.
For the metro area, it looks like the onset of precipitation might be around the noon hour on Saturday, and the main period of snow could be during the evening hours into maybe towards midnight Saturday night and tapering off Sunday.
Krohn says the southwestern part of the state should actually get the bulk of the storm. As for the metro area, he tells us that another storm should come through by midweek. Colorado Governor Bill Owens is ordering all of the members of his cabinet to look at their past audits and then follow the suggestions from those audits. This comes after a review of the Colorado Lottery that revealed several recommendations made back in 1997 had been ignored. Now, some of the cabinet members are looking through audits that are up to 10 years old. At this point, it's not known how many, if any, audit suggestions are being followed. Tent City Chapter 3. About 30 homeless people plan to meet again tomorrow in Denver after a week of research on their plan for a permanent camp housing up to 200 men and women. The Human Services Department asked them to find out more about the costs for water, power, portable toilets, and trash pickup. The group has already agreed to ban drugs, alcohol, and unsupervised children. Now it's trying to get Denver to agree on a place for the Tent City. There are four candidates, Rood Park at 12th and Federal, Vanderbilt Park at Tennessee and Huron, 50th and Franklin in Globeville, and city land between Arapahoe and Lawrence downtown from 25th Street up to 29th. Democratic presidential frontrunner John Kerry's campaign continues to pick up steam. New polls in Missouri and Arizona show the Massachusetts senator opening double-digit leads over his nearest competitors. Meanwhile, the Reverend Al Sharpton is continuing his hard campaigning in South Carolina. He was speaking at a high school there today. The Medicare reform price tag is about to go way up. In a budget that will be presented to Congress Monday, the Bush administration is expected to estimate the 10-year price tag of the newly enacted Medicare prescription drug plan at $539 billion. That's far more than the original price tag of $400 billion. White House spokesman Scott McClellan said the private market competition that has been inserted into Medicare will help drive costs down.
This legislation was important to pass to give seniors the kind of choices and benefits that they deserve and to give them prescription drug coverage.
McClellan told a news briefing that seniors are going to have better health care and more choices. Critics call the Republican Medicare reform legislation a gift to the powerful pharmaceutical and health insurance industries. A friend of Michael Jackson's family is calling a Vanity Fair article on the pop star garbage. Jackson family friend Furpo Carr was a systems analyst for the Los Angeles Police Department. He says he's not a paid spokesman for the Jackson family.
If someone says something bad or untrue about your friends, I don't know how what you would do, but I know I would do. I stand up for my friends, and that's what I'm doing here.
Carr says the article's details of drug, alcohol, and child abuse are not true. The article, written by Maureen Orth, appeared yesterday. Jackson's former business advisor told Vanity Fair the pop star has abused drugs and alcohol before and has given teenaged boys wine. On Wall Street, stocks are lower at this hour. The Dow is down more than 41 points. The NASDAQ off by more than 5, and the S&P 500 down nearly 6 points. In sports, the Colorado Avalanche are staying in California tonight to play the Anaheim Mighty Ducks. The Avs beat the Ducks earlier this month. Avs play the Kings in Los Angeles last night, where the game ended in a 3-all tie. When the unexpected happens, OnStar gives you and your family the safety and security you deserve. Just push a button, and OnStar advisors are ready to help. OnStar, always there, always ready. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 105.
Dear smokers, my name's Megan, and I'm here to ask you to stop smoking. My daddy used to smoke. He was always promising to quit. He finally did. But then it was too late. He had cancer. And now he's dead. I'm only 10 years old, and I miss my dad. He was my best friend, and now he's gone.
If you're ready to quit smoking, we can help. We're the makers of Smoke Away, a product clinically tested and proven to eliminate your cravings and have you smoke-free in just 7 days. It's all natural and nicotine-free, and best of all, it's guaranteed to work or your money back. Call us today. Thousands have already quit using Smoke Away. Shouldn't you?
Please quit smoking.
Call now for your risk-free trial. 1-800-219-2704. That's 1-800-219-2704. Money back if you aren't cigarette-free in just 7 days. Call toll-free. 1-800-219-2704. That's 1-800-219-2704.
KNRC News Time is 106. Time to check with Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is a service of the International Star Registry. We got an accident in Santa Fe and Kalamath. Watch for that. Northbound I-25 at 6th Avenue trying to recover after a pipe was in the right lane causing delays. On Highway 93 between Colorado 128 and US 6, watch for mobile striping till 3. This Valentine's Day, give your sweetheart an amazing gift that'll be remembered forever. Name a star registry, name a star after them. Call the International Star Registry at 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Increasing clouds today signal some winter weather moving in over the weekend. The last mild day we'll see with a high around 55, overcast tonight with a low of 24. And then on Saturday, scattered flurries and snow showers, a high of 36, partly cloudy, upper 20s on Sunday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150, KNRC.
It's partly cloudy, 55 degrees. KNRC News Time is 107. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 1:35 or when it breaks on KNRC.
Enid Goldstein Show continues on AM 1150 KNRC.
107, 7 minutes after 1 o'clock. Welcome to the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock, and later in the broadcast, we're going to be joined by Kevin Phillips. He's written a book. He's a Republican, and he's written a book about the politics of deceit in the House of Bush, and he's a very respected Republican strategist. I'm very interested to talk to him. Next week, we're going to be joined by James Fallows, who has a big piece in the Atlantic Monthly, Blind into Baghdad, and also David Denby, film critic for the New Yorker magazine, but that's not what he's going to be talking about. He wrote a book called American Sucker. He tried to make a fortune in the tech boom, and he went bust doing it. One of the things that we have not talked about, and I'm really sad to see it happening, maybe it'll be rethought, and that is that the Hubble Space Telescope, the Hubble mission, has been so useful, and it's now going to be canceled. But it looks like there might be a little last-minute possibility. The head of NASA has told a U.S. senator that he stands by his decision to cancel any space shuttle mission to extend the life of the Hubble telescope. The official, Sean O'Keefe, the administrator of NASA, was replying to a request from Senator Barbara Mikulski, Democrat of Maryland. He said in a letter to her that his decision to cancel a human service mission to the telescope would stand because he considered the risk too high for astronauts. Mikulski, who stayed is the home of two major Hubble service institutions, asked O'Keefe to reconsider. The senator, the ranking Democrat on the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee that oversees space agency, also called for it to appoint an independent panel of experts to review the merits of a service mission to the telescope. So maybe there will be some sort of a possibility. Skeptical senators grilled NASA Administrator Sean O'Keefe on whether President Bush's vision of returning astronauts to the moon and exploring Mars is feasible in the light of strained federal budgets. Ha, ha, ha. Not even money for hazmat suits. One of you emailed me before I left for Venice, and I, if you're just tuning in, I'm back. Oh, you couldn't tell. I got back on Monday night, and so was back on the air on Tuesday. One of you emailed me a very acid email calling me a limousine liberal because I was going to Venice. Now, I started to think about what does a limousine liberal mean? Think about what the term is because it's always used as a pejorative. So-and-so is a limousine liberal. Well, as I started to think about what does limousine liberal mean, I thought it means somebody who has presumably done well in life. I mean, I don't know if that applies to me or not, but somebody who's done well in life, but hasn't forgotten the people who haven't done well in life, and who's willing to share, or at least be open to helping, those people who have not done well in life. And so you tell me, if we're talking about the language today, why has limousine liberal become a pejorative term? It certainly beats some of these conservative Republicans who are of the opinion that since they made theirs, they don't owe anybody anything. Never mind that you don't ever make it on your own. You don't drive the people who say they're so self-sufficient. Really? Did you build that highway you're driving on? Did you build that hospital you might have to be admitted to? Did you go to medical school so you could diagnose yourself in the event that something happens? Do you know how to fix your own car? Or do the body work if you get into an auto and into an accident? Know how to teach your own children? I mean, there are a lot of things that we are dependent on each other for. So the dichotomy is not whether we're dependent or independent. The real issue is that we are interdependent, though we seem to have forgotten that, judging by the amount of road rage and the ease with which people flip each other off on the freeways. But talk to me about limousine liberal and what it really means. It means somebody who's gone somewhere and hasn't left behind or hasn't stopped thinking about those who have been left behind, is willing to do something. Pay a little more taxes, create social programs that might be useful, care about education. So why is limousine liberal such a pejorative? Maybe if you're not hands-on, but you donate the funds so that other people who are hands-on can make it work? 303-382-1150. It's just one of those things that we listen to as a phrase, a knee-jerk response to it without really analyzing the phrase. Limousine liberal. All right, the debates. I want to know whether you think the combination of the 1-2 punch of these the astronomical debt that Medicare is going to push us into, that's a third higher than what the White House guaranteed. There were skeptical Republicans. Let me go back a minute. When the White House said it wanted to fix Medicare, what it really was doing was putting the fix into the pharmaceutical companies' pockets and the insurers. They're going to get theirs before seniors get any kind of a drug benefit. And the legislation was such that the federal government, with its massive possibility for purchasing power, is not allowed to use it in negotiating drug prices. Can you believe that? And medical prices. This is an outrage. This means that the drug companies profited, and we are all going to pay for it in perpetuity. The amounts are astronomical. Conservative Republicans who have a horror of this incredible amount of spending and deficits and so on had to be persuaded. We're persuaded by the administration that the debt would be no more than $400 billion. It's a third higher than that. And if I said yesterday, I think I misstated it. I think it's over a 10-year period. But in any event, it's a third higher than they were promised, and they are now said to be furious about this. I put a blame on them because this is a White House that has been deceitful all the way through. And I think it's interesting in a time... everything is a metaphor, I've always thought, for everything else. When people get sick, sometimes the illness is a metaphor for something larger. And I'm thinking that the lack of intelligence in the WMDs is a metaphor for the lack of intelligence in the White House, but I guess that's another story. In any event, those Republican senators, those conservative senators, I think are just as culpable as the administration that sold them a bill of goods. Nobody has held this administration's feet to the fire. Nobody has done it, really. So when an outsider like Howard Dean came in and really galvanized people, I thought, terrific, This is great. He's saying all the things that I would have said, and I probably would have gotten just as far as he is. I mean, which is to say not very far at all, although he has. But right now he's sputtering, and he's about to possibly crash. Probably that's what the outspokenness would have gotten me if were I in his position. But in any event, you have here people who are trying to pass the buck, people who have made it an item of faith, who have pledged to step up to the plate, the buck stops here, to take responsibility. These are people passing the buck to each other. President Bush, in a press conference today, talking about, I don't know if it was a press conference, but in any event, he was on TV today, talking about how, you know, Congress is going to have to do this, and they can, if they work in the right way, they can get that whittled down to the $400 billion that he promised, not the $560 or whatever it is now. So now it's in Congress's lap. He didn't do anything wrong. Bush and intelligence, well, you know, we're going to have to evaluate that. You should have evaluated that before you sent people in to fight this battle, before you put their lives at risk. 303-382-1150. Will this stick? There's now a call for an investigation, an independent investigation of the WMD argument, the intelligence, what the White House knew when it knew it, and so forth. The White House doesn't want this, because if there's an investigation, it could paint the White House in a bad light, and that's number one. And number two, it could also come out around the time of the election, which would be a real 1-2 punch. So they're dragging their feet. They don't really want this. And for probably other reasons that we have no knowledge of, I imagine that there could be a lot of intelligence leaking if they actually took off after our intelligence services. This was an ad in today's New York Times. It's called TomPaine.commonsense, and it gives a section in the U.S. Code 455. It says, any justice, judge, or magistrate of the United States shall disqualify himself in any proceeding in which his impartiality might reasonably be questioned. He shall disqualify himself in the following circumstances where he has a personal bias or prejudice concerning a party. The headline is called Ducking the Law. And editorials in some of the biggest papers in America have urged Scalia to step aside, because guess what? He's been going duck hunting with Dick Cheney, and the Supreme Court is scheduled to hear some cases involving Dick Cheney. Last month, the Supreme Court announced it would hear a case involving Vice President Dick Cheney's Secret Energy Commission. After the announcement, Justice Antonin Scalia and the Vice President spent a weekend together hunting ducks on the property of a Republican donor and oil industry executive. Citing the federal law above that I just quoted you, the nation's leading editorial boards are urging Scalia to remove himself from Cheney's case, in other words, to recuse himself. So far, Scalia has ignored their suggestion, quipping that his only problem with his trip was that the hunting was, quote, lousy. Americans have always had faith in the integrity of judges, but Scalia is rattling that faith. His stubbornness is now the court's problem. Its reputation is at stake. Well, as far as I'm concerned, after the election of last year, or of the 2002 election, it doesn't have a reputation the way it did before. 303-382-1150. Al, calling from Littleton. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid.
Hi, Al.
I need to talk to you about a publication I get called the Washington Spectator.
Okay.
Are you familiar with this?
I've heard of it.
Yeah, I'll be glad. I'll send you a copy of this one.
Mm-hmm.
But what it says today is, the family's profiteering goes unobserved. And it talks about Neil M. Bush has a $60,000 a year contract with New Bridge Strategies.
Right. That all emerged from his divorce proceedings.
No, I don't know if this does or not, but anyway.
It did. It did.
Okay.
Yeah, recently, because he was deposed.
Okay. Well, this helps generate contracts for companies seeking reconstruction business in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And did that also bring out the Houston-based Crest Investment Corporation, where Neil Bush is co-chairman with light duties for his $60,000 a year?
Right, and the Grace Company was another one?
Oh.
Okay.
Ignite?
Yes, Ignite was also mentioned. So the point is that he's got all these deals going, and which he does nothing for because he's the president's brother.
Yeah, and you know about the $400,000 a year with that's Grace, okay.
Yeah. So is your point something else?
No, I guess.
Did you get? Did they have the part about the Asian women showing up at his hotel room door for sex while he was married?
No, but.
And he didn't know how they got there. But you know, as long as they were there, he wasn't going to let the opportunity vanish.
Well, this may be something new to you. Do you know about a company called?
Are we playing 20 questions here?
No, no. I'm just reading it to you, and I just wondered.
Well, this isn't the library.
No, okay.
All right. So what? What?
Well, let me tell you, if you've not heard about it, why I'll not bother you with it. It's called Engineered Support Systems.
Okay, and so what's the story here? Just cut to the headline. Cut
William
to the chase.
William H.T. Bucky Bush, an uncle of George W. Bush, joined the board of directors in March 2000. And it says Engineered Support Systems has three segments, light military support equipment, heavy military support equipment, and electronics and automation.
They're cashing in so big. They're cashing in for their friends, and I'm so amazed that this hasn't become. The one thing you can say, one of the things you can say about Bill Clinton, he never seemed to be very interested in money. When he was the governor of Arkansas, I think his salary was something like $35,000 a year, and Hillary was bringing in the dough. So no one could ever go after him on the money stuff, and nobody is going after Bush and the Bushes on all their money stuff. Al, I thank you for the call and appreciate the information. 303-382-1150. Barbara, Fort Collins, hi, you're live with Eamon.
Hi, Eamon. I just want to tell you, this is the first time I've turned on your radio show, and I am so excited and refreshed to hear that someone is not on the far right conservative slant of their perspective.
Oh, thank you. How'd you find us?
I just keep flipping through, and I can't even find a station where anyone would talk about the things that you're talking about.
Well, we have something for you. You're a first-time caller, right?
Yes.
Okay.
That's our
cheesy little kiss for first-time callers.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. Your life is going to be magically transformed, and money will just rain from the heavens into your pockets.
And
your health will be restored. You'll throw away those crutches and walk again.
Oh, I love it. I believe. Well, I just want to listen to you, and because I'm just in great. How can I explain it? I just cannot believe where people are when I listen to some of these talk shows. And they're talking, and they aren't even recognizing what's happening with education about this war and the deceit and the deficit and the unemployment and the how they talk about the liberals like we're evil. It is just, it almost reminds me of Nazi Germany. It's just so depressing.
Well, I'm with you, and I am also distressed. I mean, we have a miserable administration and a dangerous administration. But the
it's
fact
dangerous.
That, yeah, dangerous, and when they're finished, we won't have a country that we thought, the kind of country that we thought we had. The ideals, everything will be ripped out of it, and I think it's a massive push to a downhill slide, and that people don't see it, or that people rationalize it away, or that they're changing the reason that we went into this bogus war because Saddam was a bad man. That's not enough, a high enough bar to go risk lives. There are a lot of bad men around. And he was effectively sidelined. So it wasn't enough reason. They had to cherry pick reasons, and now the lies have coming unraveled. And whether or not there's enough of a scream about it, I guess remains to be seen. Whether there's going to be an independent inquiry, whether it has traction, or whether they will bring in Saddam Hussein, and so we'll forget about the conversation.
Well, it is. It's very, very serious what's happened on the world scale. Their opinion of America. How we're so divided. It's just, you know, it's whatever we can do to get people to wake up.
Well, I don't.
Not be lulled by this Christian, Republican, conservative,
He calls himself a Christian, but I think a lot of what he's doing is very unchristian. Barbara, I thank you so much for calling, and I hope you'll tell your friends about us.
I will absolutely, and you just keep up. Good work.
Thank you. 303-382-1150. Tell your friends about us. You know, we are a relatively new radio station, and we won't survive and thrive unless it's word of mouth. So if you like what you're hearing, let people know about it. 303-382-1150. And if you have a hard time hearing us on the radio, wherever you are, you can hear us. We stream live, knrcradio.com. You can always email me, enid@knrcradio.com. You're listening to the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150.
Call the host you don't agree with. Keep both sides alive and well on AM 1150 KNRC.
Warm up your winter with a roof-raising celebration of the music and times of electrifying jazz legend Alberta Hunter. The new Denver Civic Theater at 721 Santa Fe Drive presents a loving tribute to an icon of the blues, legendary songstress Alberta Hunter, whose international career spans a century. Critics agree the show is red hot, astonishing, electrifying, delicious entertainment. Cooking at the Cookery, set in 1977, is written, directed, and choreographed by Marianne J. Cannon. It stars Tony nominee Ernestine Jackson and Janice Lorraine, who impersonates Hunter with sass, energy, and musical savvy, says Donald Lyons of the New York Post. Tickets are just $40, Wednesday through Saturday at 8 p.m., weekend matinees at 3 p.m., and Sunday at 7 p.m. Celebrate Super Sunday with Alberta Hunter for the 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. shows. Buy one ticket, get the second free. Use code Super Bowl Special at the new Denver Civic Theater box office, 303-309-3773.
Does your accounting firm really know you, your business, and your goals? At Earhart Keefe, Steiner & Huttman, we spend time with you to learn about your business and your goals. As Denver's largest locally owned accounting firm, EKS&H has been serving companies for over 25 years. The roots of the success of EKS&H are built on a corporate culture where service is our priority. If you're looking for an accounting firm that is progressive and will really spend time with you, there's only one name that should come to mind, EKS&H. At Earhart, Keith, Steiner, and Hotman, we'll support you with integrity to help your business flourish. Call us at 303-740-9400. That's 303-740-9400. Or visit us on the web at EKSH.com. EKS&H. Certified public accountants and advisors. Trust that is earned.
Talk to Lionel.
Federal officials said they favor premarital education programs that focus on high school students. Now let's get down to brass tacks. Question number one. Do you want the federal government teaching, promoting marriage? No. The worst thing to do to promote anything is the government. The government. It's terrible.
Lionel, weeknights from 9 p.m. to midnight on AM 1150 KNRC. You're listening to the Enid Goldstein Show on AM 1150 KNRC. Here again, Enid Goldstein.
1:26 on the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock, and then we have Kevin Phillips on, a Republican, who has written a book that is very critical of the Bush family, this dynasty, talking about a house of deceit. And this is coming from a Republican, 303-382-1150. Dale, calling on a cell. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hello.
Hi, Dale.
Hi. I just wanted to let you know, first of all, I've been a tax accountant in my life, and how this new tax law affects the very rich. For example, President Bush made $711,000 in 2001, and he's going to save $25,000 on his taxes under the new law. And Cheney made $945,000 in 2002. He's going to save $33,000 under the new law.
And what about a person who makes $50,000 a year, $40,000 a year? Do you have figures on what they will save on the new under the new law?
Well, they keep saying the average person will make will save about $1,500, and that's for about $80,000 income. So it scales down from there. But here's the real kicker. Someone who really makes a lot of money, for example, Rush Limbaugh is supposed to be making $20 million a year.
35.
Well, assuming he makes the 20, he's going to save $720,000 on taxes under the new law.
Really? And if he makes almost twice as much, presumably it's almost twice as much in tax. Did you see, first of all, here's what Bill Clinton is advising Democrats to do. To ask Americans, would you rather pay a little more in tax and have social service? Do you want a tax cut, or do you want strong social services like being able to count on your Social Security or your Medicare or other social services when you need them. Do you think that that will play well with the American public? Because what you're saying to me is that essentially that for the price of a pizza a month or thereabouts, people got a tax cut that they could hardly feel. But in the aggregate, what it means is that it weakens our social service, our social net, safety net. It massively, massively weakens it. And you really didn't feel, if you're an ordinary citizen, you didn't feel that you got very much of a tax cut.
Well, the Republicans or the rich people's answer or reason is that, well, they pay more. And that comes to the crux of what you're talking about. You know, of course they pay more, but they get all the advantages of living in a free society. And I think it's their responsibility to pay a little bit
that
for
is,
the other guys.
That's what Warren Buffett says. He says in this environment he's made all these billions of dollars. This is a country that has supported him, that has allowed him to be as successful as he has been, and he feels he owes something back. And you know what, Dale? I agree with him. I thank you for the information and the call. And if you saw Diane Carman's column today, she says the people at the Bell Policy Center have spent 2 years studying tax laws in Colorado. They say the taxpayer's Bill of Rights needs to be revised. But here's some of the information. According to the report released this month, the top 1% of Colorado taxpayers, the folks whose average income is $1.18 million a year, have seen taxes as a share of their income drop since 1989, while the bottom 20% have had their tax rate increase. So the richest in the Colorado, their rate has dropped since 1989. In 2002, the report found that the tax rate for the richest of the rich in Colorado was 4.4%. The tax rate for those earning less than $17,000 a year was almost 10%. Is that fair? The top 1% saw their tax rates drop by 0.9% over the last decade. The rate for the poorest of the poor, whose average income is $9,800, increased by 0.7%. And it's not just those living below the poverty line who are getting stung by the state's increasingly regressive tax policies. The share of income tax paid by most middle-income taxpayers in Colorado has increased as well during this period. Those earning between $30,000 and $47,000 a year pay 8.7% of their income, nearly twice the rate of the top 1%. Is this fair? And this is just the state of Colorado. This has nothing to, this isn't to do with the federal tax cut. 303-382-1150. Is this the kind of society we want? Because this is what we're getting in this with this regime. Jan in Littleton, hi, you're live with Enid. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Enid. I didn't mean to change the subject, but I certainly agree about the Iraq war, and I'm totally against it. I was against it before it was done. But the reason I'm calling, because you know so many journalists, I'd like to have a follow-up on what's happening in London and the BBC, where they had to offer an apology.
You know what? I'm going to tell you something. I believe that when enough time elapses, that BBC inquiry that Lord Hutton headed, it was very narrowly focused. And it somehow exonerates Blair, but it's the same issue as here about sexed up intelligence, and I think they're going to find out that it was the same crap over there as over here, and that the BBC was correct to do what it did.
Well, I'm just concerned that they had to issue an apology to him, hoping that it won't be used in this country.
Well, I'm sure that they will.
That's his main ally.
Well.
One and only.
Right, exactly right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So
thank you.
Just my suggestion. Maybe sometime you could follow up with some good journalists and see really what's going on with the BBC.
Well, and also go online at theguardian.com.
Okay.
That's a good place to do it in the English papers.
Okay.
Thanks, Jan. 303-382-1150. Slam in Boulder. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. Hey, you know what? I've been listening to you for the last couple of weeks.
How did you find us?
Listening to you because I listen to a lot of different. I grew up in Washington D.C.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I grew up with the political, you know, the whole trip. You know, can I ask you a question initially?
Tell me why you called and what your point is.
You know, I'd like to know if you're a socialist.
I don't ever label myself, but tell
you
me what.
You don't label yourself?
No, Slam.
Are you a liberal?
Did you call up to play 20 questions with me, or did you call up to make a point?
No, I want to talk to you.
You know what? Cut to the chase. We really don't have a lot of time. So tell me what you're calling about. What's the point that you want to make?
You know, the point I'd like to know is where you're coming from.
If you listen to the show, as you say, you've done, then you know where I'm coming from. So if you call to make a point, I'm happy to hear it. If you call to play 20 questions, I've got other things to do here.
I would like to know if you're...
Thank you. 303-382-1150. 303-382-1150. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, a justice of the Supreme Court, said that people concerned about losing freedom to government anti-terrorism efforts should speak out. She said the Supreme Court is taking up several terror-related issues this spring, including challenges to the government detention of terror suspects without legal rights. Speaking to a group of women's rights lawyers, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was asked if people's rights were in danger. On important issues like the balance between liberty and security, if the public doesn't care, then the security side is going to outweigh the other, she said. So what she's saying is, if the public doesn't care about preserving their freedoms, their civil liberties, if you don't stand up and become a counterforce to the government, if the people don't stand up and assert their rights, then they will be trampled over and their rights will dissipate. I want to tell you this. I know it's Friday and we're all going to hit the road and do great things this weekend. But I want you to think about this, because you have a responsibility here, and it's such a little used idea in America. We're all clamoring for our rights. We're all bitching about the rights that we aren't getting. But we're real light on exercising our responsibilities. So if this administration got elected by saying that it was going to step up to the plate and assume its responsibilities, it was going to restore honor and dignity to the White House, and it has done none of those things. But the concept played with Americans, and I think it's up to us to stand up and exercise our responsibilities, not just clamor for our rights. 303-382-1150, Mike on a cell. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid.
Hi, Mike.
You know, the thing about the taxes, the Republicans aren't honest about it, because they only count income tax. They don't count Social Security, which everybody pays 15% up to $89,000, and they don't count property tax, gasoline tax, sales tax. So the less money you make, if you take all the taxes you pay. People pay a huge percentage if you make $40,000 versus somebody who made $2 or $3 million. And I think you have to look at all the taxes.
I think the shorter list is what they, the truth that they tell rather than the lies that they tell, because everything is spun. Everything is deceitful with this administration. If they told you why they were really going into Iraq, people wouldn't have signed on to it. So they had to concoct this whole thing, which is now beginning to unravel in their face. And the question is, will that story get enough traction to make enough people doubt the Bush administration? I can't believe that people don't doubt it, but there are a significant number who don't doubt it.
I know, and it's.
Isn't that depressing?
It's very depressing.
Mike, I thank you for the call. 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to AM 1150 KNRC. 1:37. Time to check into the KNRC newsroom for an update from Tim McLaughlin. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Enid. Good afternoon. Partly cloudy, 55 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Liberty Bell Telecom. Snow is on the way to the metro area, probably starting about noontime tomorrow. The bulk of the snow that will fall in Colorado will most likely fall in the southwestern part of the state. The National Weather Service says we could see some more snow in the metro area by the middle of next week. Boulder firefighters are planning to meet with the city manager to express their concerns over the Boulder fire chief. Firefighter union officials have asked Chief Larry Donner to resign, but he's refused. Earlier this month, firefighters gave the chief a vote of no confidence. The judge in Kobe Bryant's rape case will be holding a closed-door hearing early next week regarding statements Bryant made to police. Bryant made the statements last summer, a day after the incident. Bryant's lawyers want the statements thrown out, and they argue that the publicity surrounding the statements could jeopardize his right to a fair trial. In sports, the Colorado Avalanche are in Anaheim tonight to play the Mighty Ducks. Last night, the Avs and Kings tied at 3 each in Los Angeles. Break free from Quest with your new choice in local phone service, Liberty Bell Telecom. Better service, cheaper rates, keep your current numbers, libertybelltelecom.com. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 1:38.
Hi, I'm Judy Schwartz.
And I'm Evelinda Ehrman. We co-host Style Matters Live. Can we talk about your beauty salon? Are you sick of paying high prices, dealing with snooty people, and searching endlessly for parking?
We can solve your problem. Try Salon Mercedes, conveniently located at I-25 in Orchard. You'll feel at home with the friendly staff. I know I do. Enjoy plenty of free parking, reasonable prices, and unlike many salons, Salon Mercedes is open Mondays. Call 303-741-0606 for an appointment.
They're highly trained, experienced staff always gives great service. Salon Mercedes is the only Denver salon designated elite by Creative Nails Design, the top nail care company in the country.
Hairstylists use the best color line from Europe. The salon carries Bumble and Bumble and Pureology hair products and the Yonka Paris skincare line.
Salon Mercedes, located at I-25 in Orchard, open Mondays through Fridays, 8 to 7, Saturdays, 8 to 5:30. Gift certificates available, 303-741-0606.
Salon Mercedes, so close to you.
KNRC News Time is 1:39. Time to go to Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by General Motors, and do have a couple problems due to construction up either side of I-25 between Yale and Broadway. Watch out for slowing due to T-Rex. Highway 93 between Colorado 128 and US 6. We got some mobile striping going on. Watch for continued construction 64th and Federal. When the unexpected happens, OnStar gives you and your family the safety and security you deserve. Just push a button and OnStar advisors are ready to help. OnStar, always there, always ready. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Increasing clouds today signal some winter weather moving in over the weekend. The last mild day we'll see with a high around 55. Overcast tonight with a low of 24. And then on Saturday, scattered flurries and snow showers, a high of 36. Partly cloudy, upper 20s on Sunday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150, KNRC.
It's partly cloudy, 55 degrees. KNRC News Time is 1:41. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 2 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150, KNRC.
Hi, I'm Enid Goldstein. Get up close and personal with the Colorado Symphony in the only concert hall in America where the music literally becomes the center of attraction. The CSO is offering KNRC listeners 20% off tickets in the parquet and mezzanine one sections of Betcher Concert Hall for all masterworks and Super Pops performances. These seats put you practically in the middle of the orchestra. You can watch the conductor's every move and hear the majesty and force of the music build before you.
Join the Colorado Symphony Orchestra and Principal Pops conductor Doc Severinsen on January 30th and 31st for a celebration of the 20th anniversary of the CSO Chorus in a program including Pops, Jazz, and Broadway. Tickets available at all King Supers Tickets West outlets and online at www.coloradosymphony.com.
And to get up close and personal with the CSO, call 303-893-4100. That's 303-893-4100.
KNRC Market Watch.
Stock markets are still negative inside the final hour of trading. Dow Industrials are down 32 points. NASDAQ is off 2. The S&P 500 now losing 3. Analysts say investors were spooked by news that economic growth slowed significantly during the last quarter, as the government pegs GDP at 4%. That's down from over 8% in the prior quarter. Lots of talk this week about higher interest rates after the Federal Reserve backed off its recent pledge to keep rates at 45-year lows. That's why Goldman Sachs has downgraded General Motors, since higher rates could weigh heavily on automakers. Goldman says the Fed is threatening to take away the punch bowl. GM stock down over a dollar. There are some winners out there, however. Nortel Networks, one of them, rallying after the company posted stronger-than-expected quarterly results. Analyst at Deutsche Bank says the report has made Nortel as hot as Paris Hilton. While he probably needs to get out a little more often, Nortel stock is the busiest of the day. It's up 19%. Joe Matthew from the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Our contact number, 303-382-1150.
We hear you.
303-382-1150. Close is your phone. 303-382-1150. KNRC.
1:43 on the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. Kevin Phillips in the next hour talking about the deceit in the House of Bush, and he's a Republican, so very interested to see what he has to say. We're talking about a lot of different things. I'm getting a lot of emails. I'll share some of them. Let's go to the phone, 303-382-1150. Nathan in Denver. Hi, you're live with Enid. Nathan.
Hi, Enid. Been kind of scanning back and forth between you, Rush, and Hannity. I like to get different points of views on things. And I wanted to...
Does Rush Lever let you on his show?
Well, it's almost impossible to get on his
show. I know, and also it's not live when you hear it here. It's old.
I know. So I wanted to talk to you about... I heard that you were talking to people about taxes and the cuts, and, well, I've seen about $100 in savings on my taxes since the tax cuts happened. And I'm just I'm an electrician's apprentice, and I make roughly around $28,000 a year. You know, I'm just the average hardworking American, and you know, I really have seen a difference, and it has helped. I mean, it's
$100
major.
$100 over what period of time, Nathan?
It's about $100 every paycheck, so about every 2 weeks.
You're getting $100 every paycheck?
Just about, yeah.
Well, I'm surprised at $28,000. I'm really surprised because that would make what? It would make it about how much? $2,400 a year?
You mean a month?
No, if you're getting $200 a month, times 12 is $2,400 a year. Are you paid every other twice a month or more?
I think it's twice a month.
Okay, so if you're saving $100 per paycheck, which I don't know anybody who, you know, maybe you are. I haven't noticed anything in mine.
Well, it was a big surprise. You know,
Could it be for some other reason? Yeah. Because let me ask you this. If it came down to giving up your $100, the $200 a month, which I know is hard to do, but knowing that you would have a stronger country and a greater social service network, that Social Security would be more... guaranteed, that Medicare would be there for you. I know you're only 28, so it seems like it's a long, long time before Social Security and Medicare. How would you feel about giving up your tax cut?
Well, see, that's the thing. I'm not all that big on social programs. I mean, I know there's a lot of people out there that need them, but I don't want to be dependent on anyone. I work hard and I expect to work my way up the ladder, you know, doing the best that I can. I don't need, you know, either the government or the city or state government to say, well, this is what we need money to do, and, you know, somewhere down the road it'll help you. Well, that's, you know, I don't need it.
But you know what, Nathan? Nathan, you're 28. This is this your second, third, fourth job?
This is probably my third job. I just got out of the military not too long ago.
All right, so this is your third job. You're lucky to have it. Maybe you will always find good jobs. But there are a lot of people who start out like you do, who are talented, who are willing to work hard, and their jobs go overseas, the economy collapses, industries collapse where they're living, and as much as they want to work, they're not able to, and they have to, if they're lucky, retrain for something else. If they are able to keep their jobs, they do it at a reduced amount of money. So you never know what the future will hold. You may be wildly successful, but you may not be. We don't
know. That's very true.
I mean,
there's always, you know, variables at the present and in the future, you know, but as long as I can get the money now, you know, it does help me a great deal. And, you know, I often wonder, you know, am I going to be able to collect Social Security? Well, more than likely, probably not. So what I've been doing is, you know, I've been learning about investing and, you know, I got a good 401k and I put money in and I look out for myself.
Do you have a family? Are you married?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, and how do you find you're living in the Denver area?
Correct.
Okay. And you are doing fine on $28,000 a year?
Well, I'm not poor. You know, I have a roof over my head.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a decent car to drive and more than enough money to buy food and, you know, clothes, put clothes on my back. You know, it's not an outrageous living, but, you know, I'm getting by and every day I'm working harder to, you know, make it better.
And you're an electrician's apprentice, so that means you'll work up to be a full electrician?
Correct.
Okay. And what's the average salary that an electrician makes?
The average electrician makes anywhere between $28 to $35 an hour.
What does that work out to a year? I don't know.
I think a master will max out at around 50 to 60.
Okay.
$1,000 a year, but okay. You know, that's not necessarily, you know, what I have plans for. I have my GI Bill to go to school,
mm-hmm.
So I still plan on using that. And you know, there's the future just holds a lot, I believe, and that's what I'm looking forward to.
You know what? Did you, when you graduated from high school, you went right into the military?
Correct.
What branch?
The Navy.
Did you have to serve in Iraq?
Yeah, I served. I served partially over there.
So you made it home okay. You're discharged now?
Yes, I am.
All right. And would you have considered going to college, or was money an issue for you?
Money was an issue. My parents are both very hard workers. They both have worked full-time jobs ever, you know, raising my sister and I, and they've done very well for themselves. I mean, they started out, you know, with a dollar in their pocket, and now they both drive very nice cars and have a very nice home, and, you know, they're very proud of themselves, and I'm very proud of them for working so hard.
Well, Nathan, I'm kind of proud of you, because what I'm hearing here is somebody who figured out a way to do it, and I'm glad you came back from Iraq and out of the service in one piece, but you figured out a way that you, where you could, you've got a job now where you're learning a skill that will always come in handy, particularly if you ever go into, well, if you become a master electrician or if you do anything that's tech-related. I imagine that that there's some, got to be some overlap between tech-related and electrical kinds of issues. It's a wonderful skill to have, and you have the GI Bill as a resource, so you can go to college or vocational school or whatever it is to learn additionally. So you have set all of that in motion. And you know what? I think that's pretty impressive.
Well, I appreciate
and
that.
You're living within your budget. You're learning how investment works. You have a plan for the future. The future holds the surprises that fate always throws at us, because that's fate's job, to act like fate. And I think you're doing very well. And I could see why you really wouldn't want to give up the $200 a month that you have found in this tax cut. But I think if somebody was at a different age, maybe in their 50s, 40s, 50s, and contemplating the possibilities for Social Security, or has a parent who's on Social Security or requires the services of Medicare, they might have a different attitude. But I really thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
Actually, could I bring up one more thing?
Sure.
To you?
Mm-hmm.
I also observed that you guys have been talking about, you know, the war in Iraq, and being a serviceman, I've pretty much travel all around the world and, you know, have seen quite a few things. And when all this happened, I am in agreeance with us being over there, because I've been there and I've seen how the people have been treated. Now, you know, whether maybe not, you know, George Bush did lie and...
But see,
you know,
that's the issue. Now, you know, there's the question mark, the uptone. George Bush did lie. What if he did? Because as more and more, it's looking like he did.
Well,
is that what you want? Is that what you want in a commander in chief who's sending you to a war zone? You came back okay, Nathan. But I imagine you know people who didn't make it back.
I do, and when it's sold
to us is one way. Now, if it had been sold to us truthfully, it would have been, we want to get back at Saddam for his threats to my father, because we want to finish what we started in the Gulf War, because we want our hands on the oil, we want to reshape the region, we want more stability. I don't think that would have been enough for people to want to sign down to the war. But when they made it sound like in 45 minutes there could be a mushroom cloud over Boston, then everybody got really nervous. Okay, go, 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 you go. And it was not them going. It was you, Nathan, and the people that you knew going. And we're glad that you came back okay, but a lot of people didn't come back okay, and it was a lie.
So I understand where you're coming from, Enid, but I would be willing to reckon that almost all the politicians in the Senate and Congress and the House and even the White House lie. You know, that's just a fact of life.
I know, politics. But it's so then are you condoning it?
I'm not condoning it, but it's like
okay, they all lie. Well, this is just
happens.
Another lie. It happens, but some, there are some consequences of lies that are graver than other consequences.
That's very true. But I'm sorry, I kind of got off track here. The point that I was making is that we did need to be there, and.
And Nathan, as much as I admire what you've done for yourself, I couldn't disagree with you more. I don't think we needed to be there at all.
We are
stretched thin, and our resources ought to be directed toward Afghanistan and Osama bin Laden.
I'm sorry. Did you misunderstand what I said?
I think. Well, I don't know. What were you saying?
No, I said I do believe that we need to be there.
And I don't believe that we do.
Okay, well,
that's where we disagree.
The grounds that I do believe is because I have seen
especially in training classes where they teach you chemical, biological, and radiological warfare, they showed us videos of what Saddam and his generals did to their own people with chemical weapons.
Yeah, 11, 12 years ago, we stood by and let him do it. I mean, why are we fighting it 12 years, 11 years later?
And
why don't they show you training films? They're trying to get you all fired up. Why don't they show you training films of those terrible dictators in Africa who are engaged in genocide, where millions of people are dying? They're not showing you you know, the bar wasn't he's a bad man. The bar was, the reason for going wasn't that Saddam was a bad man, because if that were the reason, there are men who are worse than he is that we could have gone after. The reason for going is that he could deliver a system that would turn the northeast of the United States, northeast area, into a mushroom cloud. That was why we were told we needed to go to war against him. And it was a bunch of lies.
So do you think we should have left him alone then?
He was effectively marginalized, yes, because there was so much scrutiny on him. He didn't have any WMD. They can't find him. Were he to have become a threat, then I say, yeah, go for him. But at that time that we went in, he was not a threat. Afghanistan is a greater threat. Pakistan, where they're selling nuclear materials and rich nuclear materials practically in the bazaars there, they're an even greater threat. Osama bin Laden, a huge threat. And we are distracted now with the war in Iraq. It's costing us billions of dollars. And we don't, Nathan, even have hazmat suits for some of the people who have to be our first responders in case there is some kind of a terrorist event in this country. You and I are going to disagree about that, but I'm delighted that you called today. And I wish you well, and I'm impressed at how much you've been able to do for yourself. Thanks for calling, Nathan. 303-382-1150. I'm Ina Goldstein. You're listening to AM 1150 KNRC.
One side of us says gloating about Greg Dobbs being named Denver's best talk show host by Westword is wrong. The other side of us says, why not? Lucky for us, we listen to both sides. AM 1150 KNRC.
All right, then. The first thing we'll do is divide everyone into two groups. Those of you who travel less than once a month, please turn your volume dial counterclockwise. And might I advise you to get out more. You deserve it. The rest of you, esteemed airline pilots, flight attendants, millionaires, professional athletes, congrats, you've made the cut. And should concurrently visit locatingme.com, where you'll find a service designed to aid you and your family in an emergency. When you're away, you want your family to feel confident that they could contact you at any time. And further, that they have access to pertinent medical information from any computer in the world. LocatingMe.com does this and more. And because you're a special and unique individual, if you're not completely satisfied, return your ID cards within 30 days and your entire subscription price will be refunded. No obligation. This concludes our discussion. And homebodies, you may readjust the volume as you see fit.
Visit LocatingMe.com, where you'll never be out of touch.
Becky Graham is a skeptic.
Let's say, annoyingly realistic.
But when Becky went to Progressive.com and saw how easy it was to compare their direct price with the rates of other big-name car insurance companies, suddenly, Becky was a believer.
Well, for now, anyway.
Go to Progressive.com or call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE, and we'll make a believer out of you.
Prices vary based on how you buy. Available in most states and situations. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and its affiliates, Mayfield Village, Ohio.
The KNRC Community Commitment.
Looking for love in all the wrong places? Try the Max Fund Animal Adoption Center, located at 1025 Galapago Street. The Max Fund is the only no-kill shelter in the Denver area for injured animals with no known owners. They have numerous loving cats and dogs available for adoption, and also offer low-cost pays and neuters. To find a friend or volunteer your time, call 303-595-4917 or go to www.maxfund.org.
Look for Money Mailer's jumbo red, white, and blue envelope arriving this week in your mailbox. Money Mailer is packed with coupons and money-saving offers from businesses in your neighborhood.
Talk to Alan Combs.
Democrats need a vision. They can't keep doing what they're doing. And this frustrates me because I am a Democrat. I happen to think Democratic policies are the best for America, but they've done a lousy job of articulating them and showing America a vision for the future. You have Howard Dean who's saying, it's only a theory, but the Saudis told Bush about 9/11 before the fact. It's only a theory. Well, then don't say it, because people are going to think you're promoting that theory. You're not going to win saying that. Maybe you win the nomination, but you're not going to become president.
Alan Combs, late night, starting at midnight on AM 1150 KNI.
Hi, this is Greg Dobbs. Join me every weekday morning from 6 to 10 here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now, back to Enid Goldstein.
1:58 on the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live. We just have a little time left. Let's go to the phones. George in Englewood, how are you live with Enid?
Hello.
Hi, George. We just have a couple seconds here.
So. Okay. Well, I was asking your screener if I could talk to the last caller, and he said we might be able to do that, but do you have
capability? No.
I was really curious about his $2,400 tax savings. He has no kids?
No. I can't believe
is
that.
Is he married?
No, he says he's not married.
And this is coming out of his withhold. He's not being withheld as much?
I don't know exactly, no, but to me it sounds suspiciously high because people are very handsomely compensated who aren't seeing those kinds of tax cuts in their paycheck.
I'd like to see him call back and just tell us exactly where in what form he's getting the new money, whether it's the tax rates that went down. I don't get it.
I don't either.
I'm not prepared right now to totally disagree with him, but of course. What is withheld is not the same as.
All right, we're going to leave it there. We're out of time. Thanks, George, for raising the question because it's a good one. He's right. You know, that is an awful lot out of $28,000. Maybe that's not exactly what's happening. One more hour of Enid Kenneth and Phillips up next in that deceit in the House of Bush.
Hear both sides talk. AM 1150, KNRC, Englewood, Denver. Enid Goldstein continues straight ahead. It's 2 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Partly cloudy, 55 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Hyatt Hotels and Resorts. Enjoy the temperatures today because there's a change on the way. Cooler temperatures and some snow this weekend as we hear from National Weather Service forecaster Rob Crone.
For the metro area, it looks like the onset of precipitation might be around the noon hour on Saturday, and the main period of snow could be during the evening hours into maybe towards midnight Saturday night and tapering off Sunday.
Crone says the southwestern part of the state, not the high country, will get the bulk of this weekend's snow.
The mountains of northern Colorado probably won't see quite as much snow. The focus of the storm actually might be in the southern foothills and the Palmer Divide area of Jefferson and Douglas counties.
Crone says we could see some additional snow in the metro area by the middle of next week. Police are trying to figure out who was behind the wheel of that car that crashed into Arvada High this morning. Deputy Chief Don Wick says that investigators have determined the owner of the 1994 blue Honda Civic didn't drive the vehicle into the school's lobby, but someone else did.
The student who owns the car locked the keys in the car the night before and intended to retrieve the keys out of the vehicle this morning, Friday morning, and of course between that time is when this event happened.
There was no structural damage to the building, but four glass doors and a cafeteria door were destroyed. Replacing them will cost about $50,000. Classes began a bit late today, but school is in session. Firefighters in Boulder earlier this month gave a no-confidence vote against their chief. Now the firefighters are planning to meet with the city manager to express their concerns. The firefighters' union officials asked Chief Larry Donner to resign yesterday, but he's refused. Among the complaints the union has against Donner is a lack of internal promoting. They say he tends to look outside the department to fill positions instead of looking at those already under his command. Boulder City Manager Frank Bruno says that he hasn't asked for Donner's resignation and he isn't going to do so. Buoyed by his success in the Iowa caucuses and the New Hampshire primary, Massachusetts Senator John Kerry has taken the lead in a new poll in Oklahoma. The Sooner State is one of the seven states which will hold primaries and caucuses next Tuesday. A poll commissioned by the Oklahoman and taken the day after Kerry won the New Hampshire primary shows that he now leads former frontrunner Wesley Clark in Oklahoma 20% to 18%. North Carolina Senator John Edwards comes in third with 12.7%. According to his website, Kerry is scheduled to campaign in Oklahoma for the first time tomorrow. President Bush says the economy is strong and getting stronger. After a meeting with economists at the White House, Bush was asked about pending projections for record budget deficits and miscalculations about Medicare reform. Bush repeated a vow to cut the deficit in half by 5 years.
And the budget we'll submit on Monday does fulfill that promise that will reduce the deficit in half. Now, it's going to require Congress to be wise with the taxpayers' money. Now, the Medicare reform we did is a good reform, fulfills a longstanding promise to our seniors.
This coming Monday, the White House is expected to project that the budget deficit will exceed $520 billion. That would shatter previous records and will set up election year battles over tax and spending priorities. The White House formally sends the fiscal 2005 budget to Congress on Monday. The Bush administration also expected to estimate the 10-year price tag of the newly enacted Medicare prescription drug plan at $539 billion. That's far more than the original price tag of $400 billion. Thousands of pieces of space shuttle debris that were recovered after last year's tragedy are now being kept in a permanent facility inside the giant vehicle assembly building at the Kennedy Space Center. Mike Lineback is NASA's Director of Launch Operations and says he thinks the repository has the Arlington National Cemetery for the shuttle.
So this is Columbia's final resting place, and it's a fitting end for her. She will be used forever in study. And so while her mission in space is over, her mission for the betterment of spacecraft design is just now beginning.
Unlike the debris from the Challenger accident, which was buried in an old missile silo, the recovered parts from the Columbia are being made available to Sirius researchers all across the country so they can improve the design of future spacecraft. Stocks were lower across the board just before the close of today's session. The Dow down just over 12 points, the NASDAQ down over 1.5, and the S&P 500 down about 3.25. In sports, the Colorado Avalanche have another away game tonight in Anaheim against the Mighty Ducks. Earlier this month, the Avs beat the Ducks the last time they played. Avs are coming off a tie with the Kings in L.A. last night. Cabin fever? At least treat yourself to room service. Now save 20% off Hyatt's regular rates on a weekend room at participating Hyatt's. Offer ends April 11th, so visit Hyatt.com today. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 2:05.
Come on, Lenny, let's hit the slopes.
I don't wanna. Last time we did this, I broke a lot of bones.
You know, Mike Newland once said, genius is perseverance in disguise.
I was in traction for 3 weeks.
Do you think your business bankers at First National Bank of Colorado balk in the face of a new challenge?
You told me to ski off a cliff. I landed in Utah.
Lenny, the reason you love banking with them is because you admire their tenacity.
At First National Bank of Colorado, we have a strong history of tackling problems on the local level while providing the national reach needed to solve Denver's unique business challenges. For everything from cash management to commercial loans, trust the business bankers at FNBC to use honesty, integrity, and good old-fashioned hard work to get it done.
You're right. I'm going to attack this slope the way they attack problems.
Lenny?
What?
Watch out for that tree.
That's going to bruise.
For all your commercial banking needs, turn to the experts at First National Bank of Colorado. To set an appointment, call 303-308-3860.
KNRC News Time is 2:06. Time to go to Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by the Grammys, and only one accident really affecting traffic right now. It's in the cleanup stages in the area of Dartmouth and Havana, so watch for that. We do have some mobile road striping on U.S. or Colorado, whatever you want to call it, Highway 93 between Colorado 128 and U.S. 6, so watch for that. I-25 either direction between Gale and Broadway. Watch for some slowing due to T-Rex. With more than 100 awards and the biggest of stars, the 46th Annual Grammy Awards is music's biggest night. Tune to the excitement. CBS brings it live from Los Angeles on Sunday, February 8th at 8 p.m. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Increasing clouds today signal some winter weather moving in over the weekend. The last mild day we'll see with a high around 55, overcast tonight with a low of 24, and then on Saturday, scattered flurries and snow showers, a high of 36, partly cloudy, upper 20s on Sunday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150, KNRC.
It's partly cloudy, 55 degrees. KNRC News Time is 2:07. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 2:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
And now the Enid Goldstein Show continues on AM 1150 KNRC.
2:07, 7 minutes after 2 o'clock. Welcome to the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live. I am yours until 3 o'clock. In answer to our previous caller, Nathan, who loved his tax cut, making $28,000 a year and was doing it all on his own. Eric emails, yeah, but what about the GI Bill? Who do you think pays for that? The taxpayers do. We're switching gears in this hour. We are joined by Kevin Phillips. His new book is called American Dynasty, Aristocracy, Fortune, and the Politics of Deceit in the House of Bush. All the more interesting because Kevin Phillips is a Republican. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us today.
Good afternoon.
Tell me why you wrote this book.
Well, I wrote the book basically, to make a long story quite short, because in a book that came out in 2002 called Wealth and Democracy, I went through a round of something I'd been speaking about for quite a while, which was the economic issue and the massive maldistribution of wealth in the United States and the way it produced bubbles and so forth. And what was quite clear by the end of 2002 was that there was a larger issue in the United States preempting this issue, and that had to do with war and terrorism and fear and aspects of a garrison state and the uncertainty of Americans how to treat all this. And I thought that really the thing to do was to go to what unfortunately is the heart of the problem and talk about who the Bushes are and where they came from. Now, I knew some of this from Republican politics, and I had a sense that they were people who really owed their fortunes more to privilege than to talent. But when I really got into this book and I did the final research for it and polished up the themes, I was really amazed at how much I found of how far back the Bushes went with oil and money and the military-industrial complex, as Eisenhower called it, and the intelligence community, and how they wove a rise to fortune out of all these connections.
What did you find out? What were the most surprising themes that emerged here?
Well, there were a number of surprising ones, but just to take two or three up front, the first thing was that their power really goes much further back than people think. The influence, it goes back to World War One. The two great-grandfathers of the current president, George H. Walker and Sam Bush, were both different kinds of business wheelers and dealers. The most important one, George H. Walker, was a major financier in the Middle West who made his mark in railroads and then during the First World War in wartime finance and war production for overseas military markets and so forth. And after the war in 1919, Averell Harriman, who was the heir to the Union Pacific fortune, went into partnership with George H. Walker in New York and W.A. Harriman and Company, and they got involved in all kinds of far-reaching business deals in Germany and Russia. And these put them in the way of combining political intelligence and kind of tricky business ventures, but paid off with an awful lot of money. The other great-grandfather was Sam Bush, who was in the steel business in Ohio, and from 1908 to 1927 was ahead of something called Buckeye Steel. Now, this was in cahoots with the Rockefellers and Standard Oil, and the man who preceded Sam Bush as the head of Buckeye from 1906 to 1908 was Frank Rockefeller, John D. Rockefeller's younger brother. There were a lot of interesting practices on the part of this company, but Sam Bush, too, made his mark and got involved in war production during World War One. And in 1917, he went to Washington as the director of the Division of Small Arms, Ammunition, and Ordnance in the War Industries Board, in essence regulating the munitions companies. So what you really have here are two great-grandfathers of the current president who got the what would become a dynasty built on the foundations, the early emergence of the U.S. military-industrial complex. That's one of them.
At the same time that they call for a smaller government, they want to start. Yeah, exactly. And we're delighted, by the way, that you can join us again because I remember that you were a guest when we were talking about Wealth and Democracy. I've been a great fan of your work.
Well, thank you.
So now here you are. Do you still really consider yourself a Republican, or do Republicans still consider you a Republican? Because
they certainly don't still consider me one, and actually I don't either, because I was a registered Republican through the 1990s, but I re-registered when we moved to Connecticut, and I'm now a registered independent. I would have re-registered as a Republican if John McCain had run against Bush in the primaries, but I really didn't think he would.
What, you're talking about the deceit in the House of Bush. We have heard also reports about Prescott Bush and in World War II. Now, fast forward to World War II and ties with the Hitler machinery and that industrial complex, war profiteering. What can you tell us about that?
Well, five or six books have mentioned this, and I'm not sure of the precise truth, but I can give you what I think of it based on what I found out. Prescott Bush, because of George H. Walker's various business ventures in Germany and Russia, was somebody who was his father-in-law. I mean, George H. Walker was his father-in-law. Prescott Bush worked for him and was knowledgeable about a lot of these things and wound up during the 1930s becoming a director of the bank that Harriman and Walker founded in the mid-1920s for the German Thyssen steel interest. Now, what happened there was they set up a bank in New York that was nominally owned by a bank in Rotterdam and Holland, which was then owned by a bank in Germany. Now, there are no records that anybody has that I know of as to what exactly passed back and forth through these banks and their arrangements during the 20s and 30s. Clearly, there was a fair amount of money moving around. By the early 1940s, there was $3 million on deposit in New York. And the New York Herald Tribune in 1941 published a big article that described how $3 million awaited Nazi bigwigs in a New York bank vault. And then on the inside, on a full page, they went into the background of this bank, and they mentioned that Prescott Bush was one of the directors, not that people knew who he was at that point, with several other people from his company. And they had asked the New York State banking superintendent should they resign from the board because war seemed like it might be imminent. And they were told, no, stay on. We want to know what's going on there. Now, that doesn't quite ring true to me because nothing was going on. The Rotterdam Bank had been pulverized when the Germans invaded Holland in 1940. But I do think that Prescott Bush was so close to the intelligence community. Avril Harriman was in the intelligence community. One of his partners in the Harriman firm at that point was Robert Lovett, who became Secretary of Defense after World War II and was involved in setting up the CIA. My feeling is that what you had were close connections between Bush and the intelligence community, and he was involved with Germany, yes, but probably not in the way all the websites and some of the books say.
So then that explains why George H.W. Bush, his connection to the intelligence community, he was the director of the CIA, so in some ways he inherited some of these ties.
I think he inherited two generations worth of ties, and before he was a director of the CIA, in the late 1950s and early 1960s, it seems reasonably obvious, but just with circumstantial evidence, not with totally hard and firm judicial-level proof, that his company, Zapata Offshore, which drilled for oil in the Caribbean and the Persian Gulf, was probably an asset, as they call it, of the CIA, and at least one of its subsidiaries and maybe more would have been fronts that furnished commercial services to the CIA in the Caribbean prior to the invasion of Cuba. So I think that
That's a blockbuster piece of information, that all of this talk about him being such a good businessman at Zapata, you're saying that it was largely due to the fact that probably it was an asset for the CIA, a front organization?
I can't tell you that it was largely due. There aren't any records. Now, this in itself is an interesting story because a 1988 story in Barron's, the Financial Weekly, found that the records of Zapata Offshore had been removed from the Securities and Exchange Commission for the years 1960 to 66 in 1981, coincidentally when Bush became vice president. But there is no proof of how much money could have been involved. Zapata did make money some of the time, at least. But your question is perfectly fair. One can say a fair amount of that money could have come from other sources, most notably the CIA.
I had an email from somebody who said that she worked for a retired attorney who was a good friend of the Bush family, that the old man was considered a pretty good businessman, and that George W. is considered dumb as a post. Could you address that?
Well, dumb as a post may be an overstatement, but I would say as intellectual as the metal in an oil rig. he invented a new way of doing business in the oil patch. He would drill dry holes and somebody would fill them up with money for him. Now, this is an unknown in Colorado, of course. I mean, it spreads that far north. But he essentially had three of these businesses, and none of them did well. And what was always arranged was some kind of funding of people who were just looking for the tax write-off or who wanted to make hay with the father or were CIA assets or rogue banks or people in the Middle East. I mean, all of this spectrum of possibilities, finance George W. Bush's oil deals from the late 70s through the late 80s.
It's kind of like what's financing his brother Neil Bush, to the point where women show up at the hotel room door for sex, unbidden, apparently, just there. It all just falls into his lap.
Well, it's interesting. Of the Bush brothers, it's hard to find one that did ordinary business deals. As a matter of fact, I don't think you can. Jeb, the brother who's now the governor of Florida, mm-hmm. had a lot of connections in Miami with people in the Cuban community who've been connected with the Bay of Pigs and were involved with the Nicaraguan Contras. And some of their businesses got a bit of an assist from the CIA and other agencies, too, and Jeb had some dealings with them. If you go to the fourth brother, Marvin has received a reasonable amount of funding and some board positions from Kuwaiti businessmen. So essentially, this is a crony capitalist family.
How is it that they escape that label? It doesn't. It's they're Teflon in some ways. When George W. Bush says he's a uniter, not a divider, he says it with a straight face, and for some reason, people believe it. He's going to restore honor and dignity to the White House. The fact that much deceit has emanated from this administration seems not to bother the electorate sufficiently, at least not yet. How do they manage this?
Well, I'm not sure I agree with this, but I have a peculiar explanation. Back in the first Bush administration, he had three scandals building by 1991 and 1992. One was called the October Surprise, which had to do with the hostages in Tehran in 1980. Second was Iran-Contra, which was guns to the Iranians. And the third was Iraqgate, which was when he was building up Saddam Hussein, which most people don't appreciate. But by 1992, it was beginning to sink in to the American people that this guy was a prevaricator and that he was a gamester. And he went.
You're talking about the old man.
The old man. He went from having an 89% job approval right after the Gulf War to having a 37% job approval in the summer of 1992. And when he was ultimately defeated in 1992, his share of the presidential vote, over 37%, was the lowest since William Howard Taft in 1912 for an incumbent. So I'm not sure that this might not be building again, but I have to agree it's not there yet.
My guest is Kevin Phillips. His new book, American Dynasty, Aristocracy, Fortune, and the Politics of Deceit in the House of Bush. Can you take some calls, Kevin?
Sure.
Let's go right to the phones and to Tom, calling from Longmont. Tom, hi, you're live with Enid and Kevin Phillips on AM 1150, KNRC.
Good afternoon, Enid and Mr. Phillips. Mr. Phillips, I'd like to get your opinion on the coziness, the apparent coziness between the Bush family and the Bin Laden family, believe it or not. Let's start with what you know about the Carlyle Group and Bill Maher, the comedian, the commentator, was on Larry King Live the other night and basically said that George Herbert Walker Bush on 9/11 was actually having breakfast with Bin Laden's brother. And the curiousness about the dispiriting away of the family, they were apparently the only family in the skies after 9/11.
Well, there's certainly something to all of this. Now, the problem
yes.
is exactly what? Nobody, and the media should do this, the big networks, the newspapers, they should add up what we know and just put it out there in major articles or major programs.
Yes.
Because there's clearly something to all of these. Now, let me take the sequence. The first relationship between the Bushes and the Bin Ladens came when George Sr., was head of the CIA in 1976.
Yes, sir.
He was involved in improving the relationships between the U.S. Central Intelligence and the intelligence services of Saudi Arabia and Iran because they were so important increasingly for oil at that period. And as part of this, getting assets of people who knew about Saudi Arabia, he enlisted as a CIA asset a fellow named James Bath in Texas, who was a businessman, who was the representative at that time of two Saudi families. One was the Bin Laden family, the other was the Khalid Bin Mahfouz family. A couple of years later, George Bush Sr. is out of the CIA, but George W. Bush, his son, was busy lining up financing for his Arbusto oil venture, and some of it came from Lake, who used the money he had from the bin Ladens and the bin Mahfouzes. Now we jump up to the 1990s. George Sr. is defeated in 1992. He goes out and gets involved with the Carlyle Group as a rainmaker, as an investor, and as a member of their advisory board in Asia. And he brings in a number of Saudi investors. Now, there were 12 Saudi families that came in to invest in the Carlyle Group. One of them was the bin Laden family. So what you get by the end of the 1990s is that Carlyle has had a bunch of meetings in Washington and in Saudi Arabia that involved George Bush Sr., probably Jimmy Baker, the former Treasury Secretary and Secretary of State, and who knows who else, but included the bin Ladens on the Saudi side. So by the time 9/11 happens in 2001, you have this enormous sensitivity, I'm sure, on the part of both generations of Bushes, but also on the part of the Saudis, to the overlap between the Bushes and Carlyle and the bin Ladens, and probably the anger on the part of the radical Islamic types who were from Saudi Arabia originally at this whole combination. So exactly who did what is hard to say, but it's clear that the bin Ladens were flown out of the country, and there were several flights. I was just in Tampa, Florida, and the Tampa newspaper down there had an article in September of this past year about one of the flights from Tampa up to Kentucky to bring bin Ladens to the flight that took them out of the country. So there's a lot of talk about this among a lot of people, and the major media in this country owe it to the American people to devote their resources to laying it out.
My guest is Kevin Phillips. His new book, American Dynasty, Aristocracy, Fortune, and the Politics of Deceit in the House of Bush. More as we continue. Kevin, can you stay with us a little bit longer? Thank you very much. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC.
Soon to be the most listened to station in Colorado. Hear both sides talk on AM 1150 KNRC.
We'll be back with more music, but first a look at weather. Here's meteorologist Tom Sparks.
Thanks, Chad. There's a front moving in from the south, which is going to mix with warm air, giving us the distinct possibility for showers over the next few days. In fact, some of them are going to be big soakers, let me tell you. However, if you're planning any outdoor activities for the weekend, I have good news.
So it's going to be clear?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See how much you could save. Visit Geico.com. Geico, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
Hon?
Yeah?
Can you keep the kids busy? I'm doing our taxes.
Oh, that's right. We're using TurboTax software this year.
Yeah, and it's so easy. TurboTax asks simple questions like an accountant would, and it automatically fills in all the right forms.
Really?
Mm-hmm. TurboTax also checks for errors, and calculations are guaranteed accurate.
Wow. What about deductions?
Oh, it found ones I didn't even think of.
Like those little tax deductions jumping on the sofa?
Hmm?
The kids.
No, I remember them.
TurboTax. Taxes made easy. Taxes done right. Available at a retailer near you. See box for guaranteed details.
Computers talk in a strange language to us. Then again, so do computer techies. It's hard to find someone who will understand your computer needs. That's why when you're looking for solutions to your computer problems, you're looking for datatarget.com. At datatarget.com, you'll find people who target your computer needs in plain English. They'll cater to your problems relating to Microsoft Windows, installation upgrades, email, networking, internet, security, whether it's a business need or personal. You'll find datatarget.com makes the problem easy to solve. datatarget.com will be there at your business or home to help rid the frustration of trying to resolve it by yourself or spending hours on the phone with a tech guy who can't even talk. datatarget.com is affordable, and best of all, your first consultation is absolutely free. datatarget.com. Call 877-856-1206. That's 877-856-1206. Or log on to www.datatarget.com.
Talk to Greg Dobbs.
Okay, here's real justice. Unmitigated, genuine, obvious, don't argue with me justice. This guy in Tucson yesterday goes up to a Salvation Army setup, and the woman who is volunteering is in a wheelchair herself. She has cerebral palsy. She's 60 years old. This guy comes up, grabs the pot. She struggles with him. He runs with the pot, crosses the street, gets hit by a car.
There is justice out there.
Boy, yes.
Greg Dobbs, weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, this is Bill O'Reilly. Join me live every weekday morning from 10 till noon here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now back to Enid Goldstein.
2:28 on the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. My guest, Kevin Phillips. A previous book, Wealth and Democracy, was our guest at that time. New book, American Dynasty, Aristocracy, Fortune, and the Politics of Deceit in the House of Bush. Kevin, we have a number of people who want to talk with you on the phone, so shall we do that?
Go ahead.
All right, let's go to Bob calling from Arvada. Hi, Bob. You're live with, you know what, I'm going to, I did that on the wrong side, I think, but I think that'll work out. Okay.
Hey, Enid.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm calling because I'm concerned that we keep unveiling more and more deceit by this administration. And as we know, that people that went to the polls in New Hampshire, one of the primary reasons they voted was such anger that they want to get rid of Mr. Bush. I'm wondering if your guest would like to comment on the possibilities that this administration might be so power-hungry or desperate to stay in power that they might somehow get involved with these electronic voting machines to throw the election so that there's no way to vote them out.
I would think more along the lines of bringing in Osama bin Laden, who's probably on ice right now, about 5 minutes before the election. But let's ask him, and you can take the answer on the air, Bob. I thank you for the question. What do you say, Kevin?
I've heard the discussions about the electronic voting, and you know, I understand that in the abstract, but I think it's highly unlikely that that's going to be a problem.
It's a very troubling issue, the electronic voting, because you can go in there and change the software undetected. So hacking can occur from afar with no tracks left.
Well, but who's going to do it, and how is it going to be monitored for? I would assume that the same people that invent these things can figure out how to monitor how they might be played with. Now, I don't know that as a fact.
No, we've done a lot of programs on it. It's a very troubling issue, the black box voting. Anyway, there's a lot of talk about it. But I would guess that it's going to be more along the lines of bringing in Osama bin Laden, some kind of a diversionary tactic right before the next election to divert anybody from any serious questions about the administration, how it's handled its tenure.
Well, I think something like that is a reasonable assumption. We've had so-called October surprises of one flavor or another really going back quite a ways, and it would be logical for them to do that. The drawback is they've been doing so much of this that if they have to resort to that again sometime late next summer or in September, I don't think you dare do it right in the week before the election. You have to be a little more careful than that.
Let's go.
The possibility that Osama bin Laden is on ice somewhere ready to be brought out.
He's attached that 6'5" person with a turban on his head,
yeah,
and a long beard is attached to his dialysis machine, and he could be cooling in some, who knows where.
Well,
it's a fanciful.
If they actually got him that safely available, it might really work nicely. I've had people say to me, well, they know where to get him. And I say, well, if they know where to get him, which I don't totally believe, why don't they get him quickly, because it's not going to wear off for a while. I mean, they'll get points for that, and if they don't get him, he'll get away. I don't know. This is all the sort of stuff you hear about incessantly. They've got a real possibility that at the same time, Iraq could come unraveled on them.
Well, but there are plans being made now to do the handoff to the UN sometime before the next election.
Well, you can hand off to the UN, but if the U.S. troops are there, and they're basically the people taking charge on a day-to-day basis, if those troops start having casualties because you have a situation that's turning into a civil war, and it's not necessarily clear that the UN can do much about civil wars. They haven't been able to do anything about Muslims and Hindus in Kashmir for 40 years.
So why start now? Don, calling from Littleton. Hi, you're live with Kevin Phillips and Enid on AM 1150 KNRC.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. And Mr. Phillips, would you review the history of Ken Lay and Enron with the Bushes? I'll take your comments off the air. Thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling.
I'll give you a quick overview on it. There's not enough time to do it with dotting the I's and crossing the T's. Lay met, got in touch with the elder Bush in the early 1980s, got on a small level involved in Republican national politics, kept in touch with George Bush Sr. to some extent while he was vice president, because Bush was working on deregulation issues, including deregulation of natural gas and more broadly in the energy industry. And then in 1986, when Enron took its actual corporate form after Lay had been in other firms and in the predecessor of Enron, at that point the whole issue of natural gas deregulation and Enron's ambitions to get into an international utility approach were really flowering. In 1988, when Bush won the presidency, right after the election, George W. Bush called up the Minister of Public Works in Argentina, and he was lobbying for Enron to get a pipeline down in Argentina. So clearly at that point, you had a very close relationship developing. During the first Bush administration, Lay was made a member of the President's Export Council and the one in charge in Texas of one of the G7 Economic Summit meetings. So he got a lot of international exposure and was able to make deals to move Enron into its international framework in Britain and India and elsewhere. And this became a major ingredient. And at the same time, just as the first Bush administration was leaving office, Wendy Graham, Senator Phil Graham's wife, who was the head of the Commodity Regulatory Commission, put through a rule change that made it possible for Enron to do certain types of derivative trades that hadn't been possible before. I mean, it's a complicated thing, but that's the nubbin of it. Then, obviously, Bush loses after Lay had been one of his biggest contributors, but Lay promptly turns his attention in 1994 to George W. in Texas. You get a whole lot of Texas deregulation undertaken for Enron and help for Enron in other states. Then in 2000, Enron and its accountants and lawyers are all among the biggest Bush contributors, and 2001 arrives, and so do dozens of Enron appointees to the new administration, and they were all set to have a field day, but the company was such a jerry-built mess of speculation and gamesmanship that it imploded by December of 2001, and the Bush people weren't able to do anything about it. They didn't dare just give it cash transfusions. It was coming unraveled completely.
I just got an email from a listener, George. He said, the people who invested in George W. Bush and his brothers must have expected a return on their investment. Can Mr. Phillips tell us what they got for it? Well, I think you have just begun to do so with the Enron situation.
Well, the people that invested in George W.'s oil businesses in the 70s and 80s, I believe the Chicago Tribune has said he had some connection with one or two of his gas wells with Enron. But essentially, he got investors to put money into his oil businesses. And what they got out of it appears to have been twofold. One was tax write-offs. There were always a lot of tax write-offs in this. The second was that these investments came from people who were part of the family sort of fundraising machinery in New York and Connecticut, or they were people in the Middle East who wanted to make connections or give support to the family because of the president, President George Bush Sr., so that they got paid in tax write-off benefits and they got paid in psychic political relationships. But generally speaking, they didn't really make money.
But they got to be close to the seat of power with whatever tips, insider information, all kinds of stuff that would be available to them that could have led to things that we might not be able to identify.
Some claim to favoritism, too, because it's clear that after some of these transactions, people who were representatives of some of the investors in George W.'s business managed to have better access to things in Washington.
My guest is Kevin Phillips. His book is American Dynasty, Aristocracy, Fortune, and the Politics of Deceit in the House of Bush. As we continue, and we need to break for news, Kevin, I want to talk about Barbara Bush and who is the real Barbara Bush. Can we do that?
Okay.
All right. You're listening to Enid Live, the Fabulous Friday edition, right here on AM 1150, KNRC. 2:37, time to check into the KNRC newsroom for an update from Tim McLaughlin. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Enid. Good afternoon. Partly cloudy, 56 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Pep Boys. Police in Arvada are trying to figure out who drove a 1994 blue Honda Civic into Arvada High School this morning. The car went through some doors and wound up in the lobby. No structural damage, but some doors will need to be replaced. Governor Bill Owen says he'll step in unless the University of Colorado does something to address charges that it uses sex parties to attract football players. That claim came from Boulder District Attorney
attorney Mary Keenan in a deposition for a woman who says she was raped at a 2001 party for players and recruits. CU Athletic Director Dick Tharp and football coach Gary Barnett both deny condoning sex or alcohol as recruiting tools. There'll be another closed-door hearing early next week in the Kobe Bryant rape case. The hearing will be to determine what to do about statements Bryant made to police the day after the alleged rape in Eagle County. Bryant's attorneys want the statements thrown out. They say publicity surrounding the statements could keep Bryant from getting a fair trial. In sports, the Colorado Avalanche play the Mighty Ducks tonight in Anaheim. Last night, the Avs were in L.A., where they tied at 3 each with the Kings. Get to Pep Boys for a name-brand oil change at just $14.88. Choose from Castrol, Pennzoil, Valvoline, Quaker State, or others. In 30 minutes or less, or it's free. See store for details. Pep Boys, they're car people. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 2:39.
Belcaro Paint and Decorating hopes you'll forgive us for bragging a little. We've won an award. And because the environment is really important to us, we're pretty proud of it. Belcaro, a Benjamin Moore dealer, was recently named a recipient of the Environmental Achievement Award by the state of Colorado. What's our achievement? It's the Wet Paint Color Swatch program, which Belcaro pioneered nationally. As you know, choosing the right paint color is usually by trial and error. In the past, consumers had to buy an entire quart to get a sample. Wrong colors often get tossed out and eventually make their way into the environment. But Belcaro offers 1.5-ounce paint swatches, enough to cover 4 square feet, and more than enough to make the right decision. They're inexpensive and come in more than 6,000 colors, including our entire Benjamin Moore line. Wet paint color swatches. Good for you, good for the environment. From Belcaro Paint and Decorating, a Benjamin Moore quality paint dealer. 5475 Leedsdale Drive, just one block west of Holly. Online at belcaro.com.
KNRC News Time is 2:40. Time to go to Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by the Grammys, and really doing pretty well around the metro area right now. We are seeing some mobile striping. It'll be there for about the next half an hour on Highway 93 between Colorado 128 and US 6. Still seeing some slow traffic on I-25 either direction between Yale and Broadway, so watch for that as well. Watch for some construction delays in either direction of Federal right at 64th. Music's biggest stars come out for the 46th annual Grammy Awards live from Los Angeles, Sunday, February 8th at 8 p.m. on CBS. TV never sounded so good. The Grammy Awards. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with a KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Temperatures over the weekend are going to take a nosedive. Clouds on the increase as we head through this afternoon and into this evening. Topping out around 55, this will be a mild day for us. Overcast tonight with a low of 24, but then the difference comes as early as Saturday. Scattered flurries and snow showers with a high of 36. Partly cloudy and in the upper 20s on Sunday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's partly cloudy, 56 degrees. KNRC News Time is 2:41. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 3 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, I'm Evelinda Ehrman. And I'm Judy Schwartz. We co-host Style Matters Live. Even if you're not born with great style, you can buy it, just like we do. And this extends to our homes. Element, Denver's newest furniture store for urban home furnishings, accessories, and artwork, meets all our style needs and will meet yours, too.
Element has multifunctional furniture to maximize your space in a condo, apartment, loft, or smaller home. The clean lines of Element's furniture for today's urban lifestyle will work with what you already own.
You'll love their eclectic mix of styles, all presented in a way you can envision in your own home.
Prices are affordable, with lamps as low as $100 and sofas starting at about $1,000. Interior design services are available.
Element is open Monday through Friday, 11 to 6, Saturday, 10 to 7, and Sunday, 1 to 5. Element is located at 77 West 9th Avenue, a half a block west of Broadway in the Golden Triangle. 303-825-3770.
Element. Your lifestyle, your home, your element.
KNRC Market Watch.
Wall Street's major indexes wrapped up the week in the red after a weaker-than-expected report on fourth-quarter economic growth. Other reports showed an improvement in consumer sentiment and Chicago area manufacturing expanding for the ninth straight month. The Dow Industrials fell 22 points to 10,488. The NASDAQ lost 2 points to 2066. The S&P 500 shed 3 points to 1131. Big board volume was about 1.6 billion shares. Advancers beat decliners by a nearly 6-5 margin. Nortel Networks was the day's busiest stock and it jumped nearly 19%. Several analysts had positive comments on the telecom equipment maker, including one who said the company is as hot as Paris Hilton. All this after Nortel beat quarterly profit estimates. GM, the Dow's worst performer, driving $1.03 a share lower. This followed a Goldman Sachs downgrade. I'm Steve Orr from the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Our contact number, 303-382-1150. We hear you. 303-382-1150. Close is your phone. 303-382-1150. KNRC.
243 on the Friday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. My guest, Kevin Phillips. His new book, American Dynasty, Aristocracy, Fortune, and the Politics of Deceit in the House of Bush. Kevin Phillips started life and continued it for quite a long time as a Republican, which makes his work all the more astonishing now and independent. Kevin, before the break, I was curious to know what you found out, your view of Barbara Bush.
Well, Barbara Bush is a tough cookie. George W. calls his mother the silver fox and basically says she's the political smarty in the family. I always had the feeling, I don't want to overdo this, but that she was the tough one in the family, and I won't say she wore the pants, but maybe she wore some of them
some
of the time. putting it mildly.
She's the enforcer.
Yeah, she was the enforcer. She was a tough one, and she had a sense of how you could pull this off just as long as you were always very careful to have the sweater with the pearls, and when you posed on the front cover of a book, you had your dog and everything, and she was the national grandma, you know, but she wasn't.
Well, there, you know, people have called her a piece of work, but in one way would they mean it besides the enforcer aspect to her, that she managed to pull off the grandmotherly image when, in fact, that's not what she was. But is she somebody who has a long memory? Is she somebody who has tantrums? Is she somebody who is, besides being tough, mean? How else would you describe her?
Well, one of the things that she was known for doing, and this was truer back when her husband was not yet vice president or president, but she would be at a speech where her husband was supposed to speak after somebody or after two people or whatever, and they're going over their time, as speakers often do, and she's sitting there and people near her see this grandmotherly-looking person basically saying, you know, get that beep out of there and everything.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she was just tough. And George W. knows that. I mean, he jokes about how he has his daddy's eyes and his mother's mouth.
Did his daddy, because he was married to such a tough woman, really have that affair with Jennifer, what was her name, Fitzgerald, who worked for the, what, Foreign Service? Was there any corroboration of that?
As far as I know, there's no totally convincing corroboration. That's right.
A lot of rumors.
Oh, the rumors were all over the place. I mean, you can track them down on the Internet.
Talk to me about George W. Bush. It sounded as though his ascendancy to the presidency was a real surprise to the family, that underneath the Texas machismo, the amiability, the affability, lurks somebody who is petulant, querulous, incurious, as Molly Ivins would have put it. What can you tell us about George W. Bush and how his inheritance, the psychological, the family inheritance, has affected him?
Well, the incuriousness aspect is pretty clear there. He never traveled too much. He never read too much. He basically wasn't too interested in too many things. There's actually almost a hinted dynastic explanation for this. If you look at the Bushes over four generations, you find out that certain things recur. Now, Neil, his brother who lived in Denver, lucky Denver for a while.
Long Neil, enough to get himself into trouble at Silverado. Yeah,
well, he could have gotten in trouble if he was in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. But he basically was dyslexic in the sense he had trouble reading.
Neil or George W. or both?
Neil.
Neil, okay.
George W., Gail Sheehy wrote a piece on the idea that George W. might be dyslexic himself, but I don't think so because he can read a teleprompter and things. The interesting question is that the family has certain difficulties. One of the things that both George Sr. and George W. shared was that they tended to really try to do things in a hurry. They would play these hurry-up games of golf where they could do it all in an hour and a half, and you sort of wondered why anybody would bother. They did fast things because they didn't have a long attention span. They also would tend to garble their phraseology, these books about Bushisms, mm-hmm. these incredible statements they would make that were just a murdering of the English language. The other thing they could do, which goes back all the way to Sam Bush, one of the great-grandfathers, was that they had fabulous memories. They could memorize all kinds of things. And they would, George W., for example, while he wasn't terribly into concepts, could memorize all of players in the major league for a certain year or something in their batting averages. He loved all that stuff. And his father at one point, who was also extremely good at memory, when he was so unpopular with the press, and the books have noted this, he toyed with the idea of memorizing all the photographs of the White House press corps and their names so that if he ran into them in the hall, he could say, you know, hiya, Howie, how are things in Paducah? So there's something wrong with him.
What's it going to take to beat this guy in office? What's it going to take to eject W out of the presidency, which, to the dismay of many of us, he has ascended to?
Well, it's going to take a Democrat with more credibility, stature, and moxie than most of them have shown. I've watched the Democrats.
I agree with you.
Yeah, these people, it's just...
Kerry looks like a tree.
Well, at least he's got some intelligence. There are people in the party that look like trees and think like fence posts. No, I don't think the Democrats have amounted to much for quite a while, and they're paying the price at this point. And if they can mobilize these issues, if George W. bogs down in the Middle East, and if the economy stays soft in terms of manufacturing and a weak dollar and a potential slide in the stock market, maybe the Democrats are in the ballgame. But they just haven't shown what it takes to beat somebody like this. They're getting better, but they start from such a low level, they have to get a lot better.
What was the most surprising thing you found out about George W. Bush that we hadn't known before?
About him?
Yeah.
I found out much more, really, about his father and his grandfather and his great-grandfathers than about him. But the thing that I learned about him that I didn't know before, and maybe it was because we moved away from Washington in the late 1990s and I wasn't following it the way I used to, but he got this huge share of the fundamentalist and evangelical vote in 2000. He got 84% of their votes. That vote was large enough to account for 40% of his vote total. He has become very close to them. After 9/11, the Washington Post took a survey of religious conservative leaders and asked who was going to be the next leader of the religious right after Pat Robertson got out. And they said, there won't be any. We have a leader. Our leader is George W. Bush. And they said he's the first president because of his religiosity and his appointments and some of the ways he's helped them on issues, everything from a biblical view of the Middle East to creationism as opposed to evolution.
Right.
They like him on so many things that they regard him as the leader. Now, I also read that he got into national politics, and nobody disagrees with this, as his father's liaison to the religious right back in 1987 and 88.
Can you explain why nothing happened, 9/11, any information that you came up with, right at 9/11, the things that should have happened, planes going up, NORAD acting, etc., nothing happened. Is there any information that you have that maybe Bush saw certain intelligence reports and disregarded them? I mean, that's been widely reported to or speculated upon. What can you tell us about Bush and 9/11?
All I can tell you is that I think fewer and fewer people believe what the official story has been. The questions of the connections between the Bushes and the Saudis, the Bushes and the Bin Ladens, the extent to which Bush himself was not particularly shrewd in any of these fields and obviously wasn't anxious to investigate the people who had funded him or their friends, a lot of obvious leads weren't pursued. Now, you can say, well, you can't lay all that on him, and that's certainly true, but can some of it be laid on him? Well, people seem to think so. When they brought out that first version of the 9/11 report from Congress, they wouldn't release the unexpurgated version of the last chapter. They had 28 pages taken out. They almost all related to Saudi Arabia. And people like the New York Senator Chuck Schumer said it seemed like a cover-up of Saudi involvement. I think that the story is not out, and if it does get out in time for this election, it's probably going to work against the administration.
Heidi, calling from Brighton. Hi, you're live with Enid and Kevin Phillips on AM 1150. Heidi?
Oh, I'm Heidi, yeah. I'm sorry. I am 37 years old. I have worked for a long time on the East Coast. I worked in New York City, and I was with my child when the Twin Towers came down, which was quite devastating for me personally. I'm also a Republican who stepped out of the Republican Party and became independent, who also is a child of a German immigrant my grandmother is somebody who actually protected people who would have opposed Nazis, like Russian prisoners who escaped and things like that. And she wasn't Jewish. She was just a regular German citizen. She stood up against the Germans to protect her family against it, which is totally devastating for me that a member of our politics would work with those people. And I know there are a number of them out there. But the thing is, I've also studied in Europe. And
Heidi, we have very little time left. Do you have a question for Kevin?
Yeah, I have no regard for the people that are in the politics. Now, how do we save ourselves as people who want to have a good leader and still have a reputation with other countries?
That's an excellent question, and take the answer on the air. Kevin, we have just a few seconds left. How would you answer her?
Well, I think people who've come out of a Republican background and are starting to get angry about this should find out as much as they possibly can about the background of the Bushes and how some of these things, whether it's oil company ties or financial ties or Saudi Arabian ties or German ties.
And a good way of doing that would be to read your book.
Well, but above and beyond that, they have to figure it out. They have to make up their own mind whether these people are part of the solution or part of the problem. And hard as it is, if you're a Republican, you have to start thinking of, do you actually vote for the other side? That may be the biggest challenge of all.
Kevin Phillips, it has been a delight to have you as our guest today. Thank you so much for joining us. His new book, American Dynasty, Aristocracy, Fortune, and the Politics of Deceit in the House of Book. In the House of Bush. Thank you, Kevin. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to AM 1150 KNRC.
Finally, Denver has a talk station it can be proud of. Hear both sides talk. AM 1150 KNRC.
Warm up your winter with a roof-raising celebration of the music and times of electrifying jazz legend Alberta Hunter. The new Denver Civic Theater at 721 Santa Fe Drive presents a loving tribute to an icon of the blues, legendary songstress Alberta Hunter, whose international career spans a century. Critics agree the show is red hot, astonishing, electrifying, delicious entertainment. Cooking at the Cookery, set in 1977, is written, directed, and choreographed by Marianne J. Cass. It stars Tony nominee Ernestine Jackson and Janice Lorraine, who impersonates Hunter with sass, energy, and musical savvy, says Donald Lyons of the New York Post. Tickets are just $40, Wednesday through Saturday at 8 p.m., weekend matinees at 3 p.m., and Sunday at 7 p.m. Celebrate Super Sunday with Alberta Hunter for the 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. shows. Buy one ticket, get the second free. Use code Super Bowl Special at the new Denver Civic Theater box office, 303-309-3773.
We'll be back with more music, but first a look at weather. Here's meteorologist Tom Sparks.
Thanks, Chad. There's a front moving in from the south, which is going to mix with warm air, giving us the distinct possibility for showers over the next few days. In fact, some of them are going to be big soakers, let me tell you. However, if you're planning any outdoor activities for the weekend, I have good news.
So it's going to be clear?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See how much you could save. Visit geico.com. Geico, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
KNRC Community Commitment.
Are drugs affecting you, your family, or a friend? Narcanon provides answers to drug addiction. They offer free assessment and referral services to over 11,000 treatment centers nationwide. For 30 years, Narcanon has successfully used a drug-free approach to long-term recovery that works. They understand the cravings, guilt, and depression associated with addiction. To find out more about Narcanon, log on to www.stopaddiction.com or call 1-800-468-6933. Links don't have annual incomes. Check Line 30 on your state income tax form and help the state's non-game threatened and endangered wildlife.
Talk to Doug Kellett.
A lot of you got really upset at me when I was questioning, quote-unquote, your patriotism, when I was saying that some of the comments you were being made were actually hurting the troops, giving aid to the terrorists. You remember that. I'm sure you do. And some of you would call me and also email me. I'm highly offended that you would even suggest, even though I never used the term unpatriotic, did I? Well, indirectly, I might have been referring to you as a bunch of Jane Fondas. I never mentioned that you were unpatriotic.
Doug Kellett, weekdays from 3 to 6 on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, I'm Doug Kellett. Join me weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now back to Enid Goldstein.
2:58 on the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live. Oh, I didn't the Borowitz report. James Brown to run the Dean campaign will help control candidate control temper, says the godfather of soul. Former Vermont Governor Howard Dean shook up his campaign staff yet again today, naming the godfather of soul, James Brown, as his new campaign manager. While Mr. Brown admitted he had no experience running a national political campaign, he told reporters in South Carolina today that he was optimistic that he could right Mr. Dean's ship in the crucial weeks ahead. I feel good, Mr. Brown said. Oh, well. Thank you, Joe Anderson, for your wonderful help today. Thank you, Jordan Lyles, for keeping us on the air. If you're just tuning in, it's too late. You missed Kevin Phillips. But we will do this again next week. James Fallows from the Atlantic Monthly is going to be on Blind into Baghdad. David Denby, American Sucker. Doug Kellett up next from 3 to 6. From 6 to 9, Dominic and Billy. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. We have lots planned for you next week. Do something generous, will you? Try to leave the world a better place than you found it. Tell all your friends about AM 1150 KNRC, Real Radio in Denver. Aren't you lucky? And let's have lunch together on Monday, noon to 3 on KNRC. I'm Enid Goldstein. Have a great weekend.
KNRC 1150. Hear both sides talk. AM 1150 KNRC, Englewood, Denver. Doug Kellett is straight ahead. It's 3 o'clock.
Good afternoon, partly cloudy, 56 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by the Air National Guard. Arvada police are trying to figure out who drove a car into Arvada High School this morning. The 1994 blue Honda Civic wound up in the lobby. Police know who owns the car, but they say the owner wasn't involved. Arvada Deputy Police Chief Don Wick says this could be a very difficult case to solve.
What's going to make the difference here is what physical evidence we're able to recover from the scene, and then how that physical evidence links to, any known information that would lead us to a suspect or multiple individuals that might be involved with it.
Wick says the car thief could face a long list of charges.
The theft of the motor vehicle, certainly criminal mischief, felony criminal mischief to the school for the damage. And depending on what the intent was, there could also be burglary charges included with that.
The car destroyed about $50,000 worth of doors in the school. Classes were delayed for a while but weren't canceled. The investigation continues into that murder at a Littleton gift shop. Police had been holding Stephen Shriver as a person of interest, but he's been released now. They first talked to him on January 18th, the day that Rhonda Holland was